maybe just to indicate to honourable members our program for this morning. We will start with South African Police Services. We will get the briefing from the Acting National Commissioner on the issue of the docket analysis he referred to at the last meeting. But then, importantly, his Back to Basics program is going to brief us on that. And then we will just deal with those outstanding questions leading from the TETRA presentation. And then we will get a TCAM presentation. And after that, we will, although Judge Musa is, I think, going to join us at 11, after we finish with SAPS, we're going to deal with the report of the inspecting judge of the DDCI. So that will be the last item of the day. Honourable members, just quickly regarding next year, in terms of the first 2 weeks, last Friday we had a mini planning from the main coast side. There is a proposal on the table, but due to the industrial action in Parliament, we are not able to bring you that finalised program here. But the broad framework is that in the first week, we will deal with all outstanding matters that we haven't been able to deal with on the 26th, during all 4 days. And there's also a possibility that the second week, the first week of February, we will go to the Eastern Cape for oversight. But we will confirm those plans with honourable members. Just also to indicate that it's going to be a very tight first term. There's about 5 or 6 ordinary sitting days available to us until we might go to this full election. So we will have to utilise our time productively, and there will also be the possibility of additional days. But members, thank you very much for that. Before we start, I'm just to ask the honourable members to introduce themselves, and then I'm going to give an opportunity to the Acting National Commissioner just to introduce his team.
My name is Angie Mulwati, ek is al lid van die komitee. Baie dankie.
Morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Pindile Mola, member of this portfolio committee. Thank you.
Macheroni, avode, na atame yopere ya tuwa ya zino, jineri wani mabisha, ndi memba ka wako miki.
Good morning, my name is Lenny Ramakatani, member of this commission.
Thank you very much. Acting National Commissioner, over to you.
Thanks, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, good morning. General Khomodo Pasan, the Acting National Commissioner. I'm accompanied by General Cruiser, the Divisional Commissioner Supply Chain Management. General Sherry, the Divisional Commissioner Technology Management Services. General Vitalesi from the Technology Management Services Environment. Brigadier Leon Ravi, he's from the Organizational Development Environment. And Brigadier Craig Misha from the Strategic Management Environment, and Lieutenant Colonel Kevin Fain, who is well known to the committee. Thanks.
Thank you very much. We will immediately go to the business of the day, and we will give an opportunity now to the Acting National Commissioner to talk on the issue of docket analysis as well as the Back to Basics plan currently driving. You're welcome.
Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, thank you very much for the opportunity for us to share with you some work that we have done. Honourable Members will recall that when we presented the annual report, there was a critical area where we would not have performed at a level where we have expected, and that was Program 3, in particular the detectives environment. We made an undertaking that we will want to focus in that area so that we can improve on our performance. Following that presentation to the honourable members, we went back and had several meetings. The first one was with the Deputy National Commissioners, the Divisional Commissioners, and the Provincial Commissioners, where we following my appointment as an acting national commissioner, we're going to kind of develop a program of action going forward to make sure that we are able to cover some ground towards realization of the targets by the end of this financial year. We subsequently had a meeting on program 3 where we convened the detectives, the management of the detectives, both national and at provincial level, and that meeting was solely intended to interrogate that which is found in program 3. And our view has been that we are not doing well in that area, that when we listen to the reasons why we did not perform, we found such reasons not to be convincing. And we also felt that there may be some leadership challenges in that particular environment. I had made the commitment to closely work with the program to make sure that we turn the situation around. We then proceeded with a program, which program was to do a thorough analysis of the detective services environment. But before we even got to evaluating the program itself, we looked at the entire program. Some of the issues we will share with you later, but I think we give a snapshot of what we have found. You will find in the plan, for example, what we would have presented in the annual plan, areas where quarter 1, we will not have achieved the target. Same happens in quarter 2, same happens in quarter 3, and it happens in the last quarter of the financial year. But when you look at the annual performance, it will say we have achieved that particular target. Now, for us, it doesn't make sense on why we will not have achieved it in any of the quarters, but your annual performance shows green that we have performed. I think we will make visible a number of those which worry us a little bit. But then we also went and said, let's look at the docket, because it worries when you hear we have got 2 million dockets and so on. The question is, how old are these dockets? And what is it that makes us not to finalize the dockets at our disposal? That's what informed the docket analysis. And the picture, we will present it before the honorable members, which, amongst others, informed our intervention plan focused on the detective services environment. We are not really going to focus there, but this is where we are starting. And outlined a much detailed plan, which in our view takes us to the basics of policing. Because, for example, if someone had opened, registered a case today, there is a docket opened, it is expected that the commander will do a 24-hour docket inspection. It's not something that you must overlook, because the moment you overlook those critical steps, you run the risk of critical issues not being taken care of, like what is the quality of the statements that were taken, which other statements could have been taken in the process. So our back-to-basics plan focused on the detective environment is trying to enforce that which must happen on all levels when it comes to case management. We also have, in line with the structure that we have presented, put forward management intervention. So our drive from here going forward is that we don't want to see the detective management at national, provincial, sitting somewhere in the offices. They must go to the station so that they can go and intervene in those areas where the issues have been made visible. Just for the committee information, we spent the whole day yesterday with Gauteng. We had about 800 people in the session, which is the provincial management, the cluster management, all people in common position. And it was intended to broadly communicate the analysis that we have made in all areas, but more importantly, the back-to-basics approach that we are adopting. And I thought that it went well. We will on Monday be in the Western Cape doing the same, and that's the program that we'll be holding now. So on that note, Chair, I'm going to ask First Brigadier Craig Mitchell. He will talk to a snapshot of some of the analysis that we have done in respect of the program, those shortcomings. Brigadier Leon will then talk to the docket analysis which we have done, and then lastly Craig will go back and do the intervention plan. Thanks, sir.
Thank you, General Pahani.
Thank you. Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, Acting National Commissioner. As the Acting National Commissioner indicated, there are three parts of the presentation. The first thing that we would like to deal with is just an overview of organizational performance, linking that to some of the discrepancies in performance information related specifically to Program 1, Administration 2, Visual Policing, and Program 3, Detective Service. After that, Brigadier Rabi will deal with the analysis that the Acting National Commissioner referred to, and then we'll get to the recovery plan specifically for Detective Services. Just to remind the Honourable Members of the performance of the organisation in terms of the performance indicators in the annual performance plan for 13-14, there were a total of 72 indicators, 53 or 74% of which were achieved, 19 or 26% of which were not achieved. In comparison with 14-15, there were 95 indicators, 76% were achieved, and 23 or 24% were not achieved. Which brings me to the discrepancies in the performance information that were identified during the strategic plan session conducted by the Acting National Commissioner and top management. And from an analysis of performance information comparing 2014-15 with 2015-16, looking at the first two quarters of the 15-16 financial year, what we picked up were inconsistencies or anomalies on the performance information against indicators and targets reported in the annual report 2014-15. The reason why these anomalies emerged is because, as the Acting National Commissioner indicated, we looked at a quarter-on-quarter breakdown of the information. These inconsistencies, while either explained in part or referred to or not referred to at all in the annual report, require notification due to the potential reputational harm to the SAPS and the Department of Police. And just to give you some examples, if we look at Program 1, looking specifically at the performance indicator average time taken to fill vacant funded posts, you can see from the performance reflected quarter 2, quarter 3, quarter 4, as well as the annual report, performance information reported, the SAPS was not able to achieve this target. A similar tendency emerged during the first two quarters of 15-16. And what we've picked up is that while we set ourselves a target of 3 months, filling a post within 3 months after having become vacant, the DDSA describes a target of 6 months. So it makes no sense for us to set a target which we obviously cannot achieve while there is a prescribed target by the DDSA which we would have had a better chance of achieving. In addition to that, also within Program 1, the percentage of employees reached during proactive EHW programs, these are employee health and wellness programs of a proactive nature, reaching out to our employees. And as the general indicated, quarter 1, quarter 2, quarter 3, quarter 4, 14, 15, we indicate that we did not achieve the target. However, in the annual report, we indicate that the target has been achieved. What is also important about this is if you look at the information reflected in each one of the quarters, the totals reflected in the annual report are inconsistent with what was reported during the quarters, and the tendency persists during 2015-16 as well. Looking at Program 2, Visible Policing, where we reported in the annual report that the overall number of serious crimes decreased from 1826967 to 1820796, comparing those two periods with each other, 14-15 and 13-14, a decrease of 0.3% was achieved, and we indicated that as having been an achievement again. However, the target is a 2% reduction.
Program. Sorry to just interrupt. I think this is very important information. In a certain sense, it's disturbing information. So I think we welcome really the honesty of the Act National Commission and team to come to the Portfolio Committee to highlight it. And I think this is an issue we'll have to flag for the first week of next year, because it also raises issues about the strategic management unit in SAPS, who is supposed to get these issues. That's just an observation from my side, but you're welcome to continue.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Moving on to the second performance indicator that we would like to deal with within Program 2, the percentage of escapees from police custody versus arrested and charged. The target that we set ourselves is 0.048, not exceeding 0.048%. And during each of the quarters, the target was not achieved. However, in the annual report, we reflect the target as having been achieved. And the reason for this is because the number of persons immediately re-arrested were actually subtracted from the total number of persons who escaped from custody. And this is, in effect, a misrepresentation, because if you look at the performance indicator, it's not reflected within the performance indicator and should not, as a result, have been reflected as such in the annual report. Looking at the number of police stations where sector policing has been implemented according to the minimum criteria, sector policing being a very important initiative for SAPS, quarter one, the target was achieved. Quarter two, the target was not achieved, through to quarter four. And there are obvious inconsistencies in terms of the data that is reflected when you look at the number of police stations as a total, where sector policing was effectively implemented according to the minimum criteria, and you look at the total number of police stations. So looking at the last quarter, for example, we have a 92.17% or 1049 from a total of 1138. That was the performance at the end of the last quarter. However, in the annual report, it's 1138 from a total of 1138 police stations. In addition to that, when you look at the overall performance for 14-15 and compare it with the first quarter, 15-16, it suddenly drops down from 1138 to 1113, which is a serious inconsistency in terms of our reporting of this. And it has a lot to do with the interpretation and the application of the minimum criteria in terms of the implementation of sector policing.
I don't want to preempt our discussion, but it's quite clear that the validity of certain parts of the annual report that was tabled in Parliament is questionable. I mean, that is the bottom line. And that raises serious questions about the accounting office signing off on that. And also the issue, but I think we will come to that, but I think for the committee side, it's a serious cause of concern, because that means that performance information and information we rely on to make deductions about performance is seriously flawed. You can continue this.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Moving on to Program 3, Detective Service, where we look at the performance in terms of the performance indicator detection rate for serious crimes, where the target was a 41.05% reduction. The information that is reflected in the, each of the quarters, and just to remind committee members that these quarterly reports are actually submitted through to the presidency, there is a quarter-on-quarter comparison. So, for example, if you look at the second quarter, we talk about a quarter-on-quarter comparison, a decrease by 0.84% from 2759 to 2675. However, the annual target is it's a 12-month target. It's 41%. So it talks to statistical inconsistency in terms of manner in which we are reporting, particularly on this particular indicator. When we look at the detection rate for crimes dependent on police action for detection, there you have a similar inconsistency to what we picked up in some of the other financial programs, where with each of the quarters there's an obvious underperformance. However, at the end of the financial year, we reflect that the target has been achieved. Looking at the performance indicators specifically for the detective service, this is one of the sources of information that inform the intervention that has been driven by the Acting National Commissioner within this particular program, specifically the sub-program, Crime Investigations. Then 13, 14, 15 indicators applied to this particular sub-program, 9 of which were achieved and 6 or 40% of which were not achieved. there was an actual reduction in the number of indicators used to measure the sub-program during 14-15. However, the performance actually deteriorated, where we had 7 or 58% of the performance indicators having not been achieved. Looking at the breakdown of the performance of each one of the provinces in terms of the categories of crime that we look at, serious crimes, crimes dependent on police action for detention, crimes against women, crimes against children, and on the right-hand side of the screen, a summary of those 12 indicators, you can see the breakdown of the performance of each of the provinces per indicator, the Eastern Cape, Free State, etc., right down to the Western Cape. And on your right-hand side, you have the number of targets that were actually achieved by these provinces during 2014-15. And I think you would agree that the performance is a matter for concern and is one of the issues that informed the National Commissioner's intervention within the sub-program. The overall performance was 42%, and I think you can see from that that only four provinces were above the national performance of 42%. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Brigadier Arabi. We'll proceed with the docket analysis, but maybe just why that first part. If you don't know how big a problem you are dealing with, you are never going to be able to deal with it. So we have taken the position to do the analysis, and we have said that analysis, amongst others, will influence or inform the changes that we are to be proposing for the coming financial year in terms of the targets. As you saw the very first one, where we talk about the target is to have post skills within 3 months, which is practically not possible because from when a post is filled, there is a process to do verification that indeed that post is vacated and someone who was in there has correctly been terminated and so on. And just the advert process runs over a 21-day period. So you're already in the second month. There's still an administration process, you know, just to try and consolidate. So from the beginning, you will never be able to achieve the target. Thus, the DPSA directive to have post skills within 6 months from when they were vacated. The first 2 months is to allow that administrative process, and the last 2 months is, you know, for interviews and making sure that the candidates are being screened for them to be appointed. So it is simply just to say there is an issue that we have to attend to. And our view was we don't want to be told later to say, why did you do this? We want to say, this is what we are finding, and how are we going to be correcting it going forward? On that note, I'm going to ask the Brigadier Ali to go.
Maybe, because it's such a serious issue, I'm going to allow members who maybe want to ask questions on clarification. Because I think what you indicated on size 5, it requires notification due to the potential reputational harm to the section of the Department of Police. So I think from the portfolio committee side, we welcome the honesty and straightforwardness, but I think it raises a bigger problem in terms of how this issue was handled in the previous financial year. And I'll allow members that we just deal with that issue, and then we'll go to Brigadier Rao. Honourable Ramakatani, Honourable Malabachi, Honourable Mabija.
No, thank you, Honourable Chair and the Acting Commissioner, National Commissioner. There's two, I look at the two ways. The first one is that there is a good approach of honesty and looking at a problem where the problem is. On the other side, there is also a side that is fairly negative. And negative in the sense that looking at the presentation and on all quarters when you have all the problems, and then at the end you come to the positive. Now, I struggle to find the reason for that. in your analysis of the situation acting National Commission, is it a simple human error thing that capturing or reporting is such a wrong? Is it a mistake, basically, human mistake? Or in your own analysis in the big organization like that, it's the issue of quality control, which is called human being as well. But in the monitoring aspect, why is it that the issue wasn't quite picked up by the leadership in the process? Because you should see, even though they were the National Commissioner, you were not necessarily driving the ship, but as a structure, there should be some indicators that are flickering that something is going wrong. But worse still is at the end of that process, when those red lights were flickering throughout the quarters, but immediately it turns into green. The question is, what has been the management view on that? Because the analysis, yes, but it's done now, and you drill down to details to see what went wrong. But my question is really, did the structure fail you? The whole structure that's supposed to do the kind of analysis and accurately capture this. I'm saying this, I'm asking this question because of the seriousness of your findings in your own analysis. Because the findings may suggest that there's been a deliberate attempt or deliberate program to mislead in terms of the capturing, to mislead not only the structure of the police, but to mislead the country and to mislead Parliament. Then it becomes quite a serious thing to handle. That's why I'm asking this question, because I think it would be useful maybe at some point when you have time to sit around the table and have some conversation, because there are people who, in sense, as big as it is, that has fairly capacity to be able to delineate things and to be able to capture them correctly. But the question is, did they fail to see this? Or they did this deliberately with the management condonation? Because it may suggest to me, looking at it from where I'm sitting, this simply management condonation thing. So let's look good instead of looking bad. But it's not helping the country, it's not helping anybody. And of course, when you pick it up like this, I'm sure there will be some consequences on this. Quite serious consequences. Let me leave it there. I just want to know those two questions.
Honorable Molabati.
Yeah, sure, sir. These revelations are really very worrying. In simple terms, it means this committee and Parliament was lied to for quite some time. And somehow we have vindicated, because some of these other things we've been trying to mention, and it was like we are being, you know. And you sit here and ask yourself, what was the intention? You ask yourself, what was the intention to be doing this? And you don't get answers, you know. My question is, these discrepancies about the percentages on page 8, to what effect does it have on the current stats? Do they have an effect on the current stats?
talking about the Honourable Mahija.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you for the presentation. I just want to mention one thing that the National Commissioner Hatan, he's studying okay, but then what I advise as a member of the portfolio committee is that such needs to take the local police station as a basic, important, and serious unit, because that's where things are happening. And I have not confirming that you had a meeting with close to 800 people from plazas, etc. And you also need to see to it that things are going on okay at local police stations. Because, for instance, we sometimes for budget we approve, and the end product on the ground as we move around in our constituencies does it does not match the money that we give the department. Therefore we'll urge the NETCOM and everybody who's doing his job to see to it that we have correct statistics through professional data collectors, so that the data that goes into the system, it is the correct data, because statistics, class statistics, in black and white, there's a decrease, but on the ground, it is not like that. Meaning that it's either there's no professional data collector on that function, there's no monitoring, there's, in fact, there's no one who is taking care that you have genuine data collected, ending up with wrong statistics, crime statistics, all over South Africa, in all the local police stations. Therefore, for such to prove themselves effective, you need to do a lot of monitoring and supervision at the local ground. Because it's no use to come and we sit here, we talk, we go through these documents and so on, but at the basic unit, there isn't a proper supervision and monitoring by the national, province, etc. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Maybe let me start with the question of who was in part of the 800. I may not have been, I have omitted to mention that all police stations in Gauteng were represented by everyone who is in a command position. The station commander, the head of the detectives, the head of support, the head of the school policing. We also had, for example, unit commanders from your canine, your dog unit, and so on. So it was a much bigger group, which we feel it is important that you have in the main station there, because that's where implementation is taking place. They are at the core phase of delivery. And it is for that reason, Chair, that we are saying in our basics approach, we don't want to see these people being called more regularly to provincial level. Rather, the province or the cluster must go to the stations. And it is also along those lines that we have said that we don't want them to go and find holes and come back. and send reports and identify the following. They need to be there to go and have this dealt with at that level where it is happening. And the other reason why we call those people at that level is precisely to make sure that we have a common understanding on what is it that is supposed to be happening at station level, because the stations are at the core phase of delivery. They interact with the communities, and if we were to pump resources, those resources must be at that level so that we make a difference in the fight against crime. And we are going to be taking that approach to all other provinces. As I said, on Monday we are here in the Western Cape. It's bringing everyone together and taking them through. Maybe just going back to the first questions or issues raised by Honorable Ramathagani. They are, like you started, they are on two levels. The one level was, when you start asking the process owners, they are understanding on the target. You know, you get two separate answers. So you get a level of uncertainty on what exactly were they pursuing. And that's where we started realizing there is a problem, because you can't pursue a target not understanding what that target means in practice. So we are saying you have to take ownership. And then it's a question of, in actual fact, what we thought we are looking at is aid. But somewhere the consolidation level, we are made to pursue B. And the same applies when it comes to submission of reports, where you now say we have performed. The process owner will say, but ours has submitted this, which will confirm that we did not achieve. But then you will get a different, capturing. So it's a number of issues that we really need to give ourselves time to interrogate. So really the purpose of making this visible is to say we have started somewhere, and we are confident we will get where we want to be. That's why I said, amongst others, what we are putting before the honorable members will be what is going to inform, amongst others, our change in approach in as far as what goes into the 2016-2017 plan. And again, at a point where we are ready to detail, we will be able to say, remember there were these discrepancies that we have made visible, we have done thorough work on them, and this is what we are proposing should be the focus. If I just use that one example of 3 months versus 6 months, so that the honorable members understand where we are coming from. It must not be, but now you can't move from a target of 3 months to 6 months. Now, honorable chair, if you were to go and run a race and you know that you are not going to make 21 because you never trained, why do we even bother trying? Rather go and run a 5-kilometer race, you know that this is what I'm capable of doing. So that target is saying to us, we need to do some work and alignment with the directives that are there. But once we have aligned, to be able to focus the resources and our efforts to give a chance of achieving that particular target. So, Honorable Chair, it's really on a number of levels, but we will request that we be given more time. When we come back, I think we may give you a much more comprehensive picture. But what I appreciate is that even the process owners, and I've got some of the generals here who are part of those sessions, will have noted, will have expressed hope in the effort that is made to make them understand their own business, and to say, if you were to measure something, you need to, the one critical thing that you can move away from is the issue of data integrity. Because if we were to come back to you tomorrow on what you have given us today. You must give us the same answer. It can't change because this is recorded somewhere. The issue of do you have manual system or do you have automated? Because if you are extracting that information from a manual system, there is a high element of human error when it comes to manual system. And it's a question of what do I like? What is it that I don't like? What is it that I choose to report on? So if this is, if there is enforcement to say, let's look at your systems so that I must be able to sit at a point and extract that information, and there must be correlation between what you will have given and what I am getting at that particular point. Maybe to Honorable Muribati on how what is on aid is impacting on the crime stats, I can't at this stage say because we are still in the initial stages. If we were to find any discrepancies there, we will gladly revert back to the committee and honorable members to say this is what we have found. Thank you, Chair.
On this section, we thank the Acting National Commissioner for his response, but I think from the committee side, I think that third week in January we'll have to have police coming back, especially with the issue of crime stats, but we will also be more tasked, the committee's research unit, to look at these issues because it's got implications, because it impacts on our process, and we believe that we'll also, from an oversight point of view, it's also governance model of SAPS that comes into play, because we had undertakings before this committee in the previous months about the role of Stat SA and memorandums of understanding and so forth and so forth. So we will also have to call them, you know, that we can get clarity that the basic information that's provided to the committee in terms of targets is also correct. So that's going to be a major issue coming to next year. But thank you for the efforts and we'll await that report. Let's go ahead with the others. Brigadier.
Honourable Chair and members of the committee, good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to do this presentation. You will note that in my presentation we are now starting to move towards the finding the solution and taking into account the performance in terms of Program 3 where the detectives are on average not performing very well. The instruction from General Bastani was that we first of all start looking at the workload associated with detective service, because that's one critical aspect that impacts on their ability to perform effectively when it comes to the investigation of crime. Now, when we look at the workload of detectives, we need to understand that there's new cases constantly coming in that must be investigated by detectives, and then there's also a so-called backlog. And the aim of this first exercise was to determine what is that backlog that we are dealing with if we're talking about crime and dockets that need to be investigated. So what we've done is the approach that we followed is a little bit unconventional in the sense that we started looking at the inner workings of our systems to see what do we have on hand, and we took a snapshot of the South African Police Service's crime administration system on the 2nd of November 2015. And at that time, we found on the system itself, we had 603,000 dockets that were open, that is older than 1 year. That means they were reported in 2014 or earlier. Now, for the purpose of our definition, we said, okay, that basically constitutes the backlog that we are dealing with. Now, the problem with the backlog is it's not going to go away. We can file cases, you know, with a broad forward date and those type of things, but the cases keep on coming back. So basically what's happening here is we have a significant backlog of cases that we can consider as unresolved until we get to a stage that we can finally file these type of cases. Now, the other thing that we also looked at is the number of charges. Because there's 603,000 dockets that were open on the system, but that included 677,000 charges, because some dockets have more than one charge, and some dockets have a single charge. Now, then started unpacking that, and we found that the highest percentage of dockets that were open on the system is in Gauteng, 25%, 149,000. That's then followed by the Western Cape of 125,000, that's 21%. KZN on 84,000, the Eastern Cape on 64,000. I'm not going to read through all the detail, but that is where these cases were in terms of the provinces. But what we also noted is that there's correlation between the backlog and the number of cases reported. The provinces with the highest number of cases reported will also have the highest backlog. So General Pasani's indication was that if we want to improve the effectiveness of detectives, we have to start working on this backlog. Because the backlog adds to the workload. You cannot continuously deal with this backlog. On this specific date, when we took the snapshot of cases open, and I want please the committee to note that this excludes dockets that were in the filed at the moment, as we will go further in this exercise to determine the total backlog. We just started touching on the tip of the iceberg now. But at this specific moment in time, the oldest case that was open on our system dated back to 1978. And that is, it was a theft case that was still open that we, that was continuously opened and reopened and closed, etc. So if we look at the just a timeline or a breakdown of what we were talking about, the majority of the cases, 218,000 of the backlog older than a year, was reported in 2014, 146,000 reported in 2013, 77,000 in 2012, 46,000 in 2011, 32,000 in 2010. And now we're starting to get to the critical ages now. But remember, the first ones, members that I dealt with now, up to 2010, we're already talking about 5 years old. Now we're going towards 5 to 10 years on 62,000. Between 2000 and 2004, there was 14,000, almost 15,000 open on that day on our systems. And reported before 2000 was 4,491. Now, if we look at the cases that were opened before 2000, the highest number was in Gauteng province, 1,654, followed by the Western Cape of 1,286, KwaZulu-Natal 745, and then the detail of the remaining provinces are listed there. Now, what we've done in the exercise now is the exercise that was discussed by General Pasani in Gauteng yesterday. We are now briefing the provinces because we've given them the detail on these cases, and they were instructed to go immediately and see why are these cases still open. And we dealt with the same issue again yesterday, and the intention is Monday when we go to the Western Cape, we will also unpack and then go and investigate why are we sitting with this backlog and why we have cases that are on the systems open that is influencing our workload that can be resolved. Now, the reason why we're saying that there are certain things that can be resolved, when I get to the slide where we talk about the nature of complaints on the system, a very good example is if you look at the top 10 stations in the country with charges older than 10 years, it was, first of all, we started with Richmond KZN with 939 on that specific day, followed by Katlehong 775, Mitchells Plain 767, Pinedown 499, and then it continues like that. Now, what we found is that at some of these stations, the cases that are open on the systems are cases that we think, well, that can take long, but not 10, 15 years. Your typical murder cases, your culpable homicide, those type of cases. But interestingly, is if you look at the station like Richmond in KZN, we found that the majority of the 939 cases that were older than 10 years were actually less serious offenses that relates to traffic, the Road Traffic Act and those type of things, and the Liquor Act, that could have been dealt with and should have been off our system a long time ago. So we are also working towards the issue of data integrity, because as General Pasani said, you cannot take a strategic and operational decision if your baseline information is not correct. So we are slowly moving in towards that direction. Now, there's the top 10 contributing charges for dockets that's older than 10 years. You will note the bottom one, 53,000, or less, what we refer to in SAPS as a less serious crunch, or liquor, the liquor trade, the liquor products, and sorghum beer. Now, this 53,000, and those things could have been dealt with very easily, and it could have been taken off our system so that we have more accurate issues on the table. Problem with murder, we're sitting with 48,000 murders. That is still open on the system on that specific day, that's older than a year. Then we have driving under the influence, drug-related offences, traffic, road traffic act offences. They are all listed there. Now, some of these times we can say, yeah, they take longer to investigate, but as I initially said, it doesn't justify a 10-year or a 15-year period that we deal with. A very good example of murders that where we have a high backlog is a station like Katlehong. That's got almost more than 500 murder cases. They are old murder cases that are still not resolved at this moment in time. So the next exercise that we've gone through, Honourable Chair, is after we've gone through the issue of the age analysis and after we've presented this to the provinces, and as I said, we're going to now engage on local level to manage this type of things. The next thing that we look at, and that is what is represented on the map there, is we identified the stations in the country that received over the last 7 months that had a workload of more than 1,000 cases, but their detection rate is below the national average, so that we can understand where do we need to intervene. We cannot just haphazardly decide and run to every station and try to solve. We need to target this. We need to understand where we are going, where are those stations that are not performing in terms of, you know, detecting or solving crime. Now, the picture there gives you the whole country, and you will note the interesting thing that we noted in our research was these stations are actually clustered, all of them together. You will find that when I go to the next slide, I'm going to, this is for interest sake, to look at the whole South Africa, and if I may use the pointer on the one at the back here, that portion in Western Cape, that's typically what we are going to deal with on Monday. This is an example of what we dealt with yesterday, when we spoke to the detective and management in Gauteng province, and we indicated that if you look at these stations in Gauteng, all of those stations listed or represented on that map, they received more than 2,000 cases in the last 7 months. Some of them brought forward, you know, in terms of the backlog, some new reported cases. The stations that are indicated in yellow, like Bronco Spruit 1 and those ones on the outside, sorry, I'm jumping around with the pointer, Carltonville, Randfontein, they are between 30% to 40%. You will remember that Brigadier Mitchell said our national target for detection is 41%. Now, those stations in yellow are currently between 30% and 41%. Then we get to the more problematic ones, the amber ones, where these stations are now between 20% and 30% detection rate. And then the critical ones are the ones in red, where we have stations with a detection rate for serious crime of less than 20%. Now, the target is 41%. You know, if I may zoom into that for a moment, once again, you see all of these stations are actually clustered together. Now, that helps us to decide what type of intervention we are going to implement here, because geographically, you will find that they are close together, so you can apply similar projects and similar intervention to neighboring stations. So we can see it's also high likely that you will find that the same type of perpetrators, the same perpetrators are, you know, linked to the cases in those specific precincts. So the problems that we've highlighted there is you will see a Midrand police station with a 19% detection rate, a Diepsloot with 18% detection rate, Linden with 18% detection rate. So the part of this is now we would like to see where the problem is, because there's a significant difference between looking at a table of statistics and looking at a map, because the map tells you where the problem is. You can exactly see where you need to intervene. The next thing that we did, Honourable Chair, is after we've done the detective portion, we also did an analysis on reported crime. Now, all the stations, this is an example of Gauteng province, all the stations on the map that you see in front of you now, the red ones, are stations where crime is currently on the increase. Now, the interesting phenomenon now in Gauteng is you will find that in the center, you'll find most of the stations, there's a decrease in reported crime. But the worrying thing is now that your neighbor or your stations on the borders of Gauteng is now experiencing an increase in crime. We are not saying it, but we must be careful that we are not just displacing crime from the center to the outskirts of Gauteng. That is proper research. That's one thing that we're thinking about at the moment, because we would like to prevent the situation that we just displace crime. Our vision and mission is to combat crime, not just to move crime around. Now, the good thing that we can see here is, first of all, we've identified the top contributing stations, and they are represented by means of a red circle. So there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 stations in Gauteng that's got more than between 4,000 to 7,000 cases in the first 7 months. So they are what we call the high crime rate stations. The good thing that we saw there is at all of the five, your crime is on the decrease. And the second category with a crime between 3,000 to 4,000 are the amber ones. Now we also noted that at most of them we see a decrease in the reported crime. Now what we then found is what is problematic for us from a crime prevention perspective. If you have a crime or a police station that's in your top categories of crime contributors and there's also an increase in crime, it can have a significant impact on overall reporting rates. That, for instance, will include a station like Randfontein, Tagiso, Dobsonville, those stations on that side there, where they are already in the high category, but crime is also on the increase. So that means if we talk about numbers, the volumes, that can have a significant impact on the reporting rates. When we did the analysis the first semester, we've identified these problematic stations here in this cluster in the center of Gauteng and that portion there. That includes your Norcombe Pops, your Tembisa, and those types of stations. Now, the important thing is the first part of the analysis is that we looked at where do we have increases in crime levels and where are our high crime areas. Because if you want to make immediate impact, you need to respond to volumes of crime and where we have the indicated increases in crime levels. What the next slide indicates to you is our report serious crimes. It's basically the same as the previous slide. It just gives you the detail of the different stations, exactly the same picture. All the green stations that are reflected there on the map are the stations where we experience a decrease in the reported crime. But what we've done next is to say we must now be very careful because it may be that we experience a decrease in serious crime, but we need to understand the dynamics associated with crime and then also lower level breakdown. And you're going to see that in my next slide. If you go to the next one. So where's that page up and down? Yeah. So let me go to this one now. Now, if you look at contact crime, you will see that the stations that were green on the previous slide, if we talked about the total category of crime, are suddenly some of them are now turning red. Now that is a warning sign that tells us, listen, there are certain stations, and if you look at Gauteng, you will find it in this grouping here, that specific spot there. There's significant increases now in contact crime. If you look at overall crime, serious crime, it looks well. We know we're doing well, it's going down. But if you look at specific contact crime, or categories like contact crime, you will find that there's an increase in the reported crime. I'm just looking for the key to start. There it is. Can you see, that one represents all serious crime. But if we go to the next one, you see that one, that is contact crime. So it indicates to you that you must be careful to accept if there's a general decrease in crime that it includes all categories. Because if I look at contact crime, that specific slide, there's a total different picture. So suddenly those stations are popping out as contact crime stations. And the methodology that we are now going to apply in future is we are going to build time maps to see what's happening, because I think the ultimate aim is to turn the whole Gauteng green. Whether we will be successful in that, we will never know. I think only time will prove that. But we are going to take these maps and build time maps to see are things changing green, so that we understand crime not only from a statistical perspective, but also from a spatial perspective. Because I think you will agree with me, if you look at the map, it says a lot more than just a table of crimes. Because you can immediately see where problematic areas are. And the interesting things are, specifically here, you can see that the crimes, the stations where you have problems are grouped together. So that will help you in determining a viable solution in terms of a geographical approach. This is a property-related crime. This is the third slide. It just shows you that in terms of property-related crime, there's on the outskirts of Gauteng where we have problems, but it differs from your contact crime. So your approach to contact crime and your targets in terms of contact crime is not the same as your property crimes. Honorable Chair, the last slide that I want to talk to is we also had a detailed discussion on targets. And the question was, the South African Police Service set a target of a 2% reduction per annum in our strategic plan. The strategic plan of steps 2014 to 2019 states that we would not want to reduce serious crime with 2% per annum. Now, that doesn't mean you just continue with a 2% reduction every year. If you look at the slide there, what we've done is the blue line. Now, if we're working with a station with, let's say, or a province with 10,000 cases, the blue line on that slide represents a 2% reduction per year. If that should ever happen, but that's more a theoretical exercise because it will never exactly happen like that. Now, what it means is over 5 years, it's not a 10% reduction in crime because you said your 2% reduction is set on a reduced figure in the following years. So it boils down to around about a 9.6% reduction over a 5 year period. Now, what do we do now if we don't achieve the target? And that is what we would have to go and sit and dissect that as well, because what happens in such, you've seen now that our previous year we only managed to reduce crime with 0.3%. Now, what does that mean? Because I can now just say again 2% next year, because if we do that, then we're not going to achieve the 5 year trend. Yeah. So what we are saying now is if you follow the amber line there, it's just an example. If we manage to reduce crime with 0.5% in year one, then that means in the remaining years we must increase our target to still ensure that we achieve that long-term target. Because the commitment that we made in terms of the strategic plan is, 2% per annum over a five-year period. So as you said, Honorable Chair, then our target for year two might be 2.29% or 2.35%. So you have to adjust your target to achieve the long-term target. But the other thing is, we said if you overperform in year one, that's the red line on the graph, if you do better than expected, now there's two options that you can follow. You can say, okay, let's take a little bit of failure off myself, and you adjust your target a little bit less, you will still get your target, achieve your final result. But we said, as General Paslani indicated, why do you want to erode your success that you achieved in year one? If we made a commitment to 2%, then year on year we stick with the 2%. So that means over the longer term, you're going to achieve a better result than what you initially planned for. So there's no need for us to adjust targets upwards. If we are on the roll and we are achieving our targets, let's stick to the 2%. I think the point that we're trying to make here is the target setting process, General Paslani indicated to us, we must even relook the current targets to make sure you cannot just purely go at 2% per annum. You need to adjust your target according to your actual results to ensure that you achieve your medium-term strategic framework targets. So that concludes my part of the presentation. Thank you, sir.
Brigadier, can we go to the recovery plan program team?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Just looking at the detective recovery plan from a bigger picture point of view, I think if we take into consideration the fact that this particular sub-program has 10.5 billion rand of the budget, 10.5 billion allocated to it, which constitutes about 13.7% of SAPS's total budget, I think we can look at that as a sizable investment by government as well as by the citizens of this country in the investigation of crime. Comparing Program 2 to Program 3, with Program 2 we know there are significant dependencies that we have to deal with. However, with Program 3, it is largely within our control. And as a result of that, non-performance from a Program 3 point of view has a lot to do with our own performance as an organization. It talks to justice denied from a victims of crime point of view. It talks to the perceptions that the public have of SAPS's professionalism as a whole, and also has a negative impact on the entire criminal justice sector as well as the GCPS cluster. Just to run through the presentation overview, the background looking at the case for change, some of which we've dealt with already, but just to remind you, a thorough analysis of performance factors, of performance factors contributing to underperformance was conducted. The recovery plan purpose and approach, we will deal with that. And then the operational plan itself, looking just at the priorities and the key actions. The operational plan is a very detailed operational plan. It includes responsibilities, timeframes, performance indicators and deliverables. And then just to wrap up with monitoring and evaluation. In terms of the case for change, Chairperson, Honourable Chairperson, just to remind the committee, those were the areas of underperformance for the first and the second quarters of 2015-16. They include the detection rate, serious crime, contact crime, crime dependent on police action, crimes against women, crimes against children, the conviction rate, crimes against women, percentage already dockets, serious crimes, crimes dependent on police action, crimes against women, as well as crimes against children. So there is significant underperformance within this particular program. Looking at the analysis of the performance that we conducted, following the detective, the Program 3 performance review that was conducted by the Acting National Commissioner, we went into a detailed process of actually identifying the challenges associated with the performance of this particular sub-program, and we categorized them into two groups. First set of challenges relates specifically to performance management of detectives, including data verification. The second group of challenges relates specifically to case docket management and the investigation value chain. Looking at the first issue, the lack of clarity regarding the source system for detective data sets to measure performance. This is an issue that has been with the organization for a number of years. General Patlani referred to the process owners actually not fully understanding the targets, the performance, etc. This has contributed to this. And in fact, we are using two different data sets to measure national performance as opposed to that which is used at station level, for example, to measure performance at that level. A continuous updating of the system to capture actual performance is not done. This results in an annual spike in terms of performance. And the failure to capture, for example, all convictions in case dockets where you have more than one charge reflected in a case docket, that will reflect negatively on the conviction rate. The case docket age analysis, which Brigadier Rabi referred to, has not been conducted in detail. It was presented for the first time at a strategic planning session that was hosted by the Acting National Commissioner. And the response by top management was overwhelming because it was the first time that they'd actually seen information like that presented to them for the purposes of planning. Lack of analysis of backlog versus current year performance, also an issue that Brigadier Rabi referred to. The non-verification of wanted suspects as well as the non-verification of cancelled wanted suspects. We need to verify this. We have a very huge database of wanted suspects, some of which we can accept are no longer wanted suspects, and this has reputational issues for SAPS, so that needs to be addressed going forward. In addition to that, alternate dispute resolution cases, your ADR cases, are not included in trial ready and conviction data. And while it's not a conviction per se, an ADR still emanates from an investigation that has been conducted by a detective service investigating officer and is a positive contribution from an investigative point of view. Dockets closed as undetected, this terminology is not commensurate with a customer-centric approach. When you have a member of the public reporting a crime to a police station and then being informed a month later that the docket has been closed as undetected, the public doesn't understand what that means. And for them, all it means is that SAPS was not able to resolve the crime. Inadequate key performance indicators and formula to measure detective service performance qualitatively and quantitatively. Looking at our performance indicators, they have a very inward-looking approach. They do not have an adequate outward-looking approach from a community point of view. Delayed or non-submission of results of trial by detectives, this impacts on the process applicable to our data integrity as well. Identified deficiencies associated with bail and suspended sentences. Challenges relating directly to the case docket management and investigation process. The first issue there, current national interventions lack sustainability. We have a number of national interventions that have happened in the past where the national office has taken significant capability down to station level. They've corrected the situation at station level, only have it to have it revert back to normal within a very short space of time. Lack of defined timelines for investigating categories of crime. What we're looking for there is standard resolution rates per crime time. There must be a difference in terms of the resolution rate that is applicable to a murder docket as opposed to, for example, a shoplifting docket. inconsistent closure of case dockets undetected and withdrawn where further investigation is possibly required, docket allocation not taking volumes, complexity and competency levels of investigating officers into consideration, the inadequate tracing of wanted suspects, the management of crime scenes linking onto the broader investigation value chain, and then the submission of forensic evidence to laboratories by detective service within 7 days of collection is not measured. An issue that we've also picked up on is the fact that forensic evidence and leads are not utilized. The taking of buccal samples is not prioritized as required by the Act, looking specifically at Schedule 8 persons arrested in terms of Schedule 8 offenses. Look, the inadequate detective response times and communication with complainants, so for example, interviews not conducted within 24 hours, and progress, regular progress to complainants on the progress that has been achieved with the investigation of the crime is not communicated. Inadequate management of cases to court, cases struck off the roll, as well as cases not even placed on the roll. No system for the managing of docket links based on forensic evidence-based leads. So, for example, one suspect linked to 10 distributed case dockets. Inadequate stakeholder management in the crime investigation value chain. It's important for detectives to understand who they need to be communicating with both internally and externally to improve the quality of the investigations. Inadequate management of the dismissed appeals. This also has significant reputational issues for the SAPs, and inadequate management of organized crime threats. Honorable Chairperson, looking at the purpose and approach, the purpose of the recovery plan for detective service is very specific. It's to turn around areas of underperformance within the detective service before the end of the 2015-16 financial year. But what General Patlani has been has emphasized on a number of occasions is the fact that we need to ensure sustained implementation of the initiatives reflected in the recovery plan going forward. So it will actually have a dual purpose, turning around those areas of underperformance, but also ensuring that what is implemented becomes part of day-to-day business of detectives. The approach implementation will be effected through the Office of the National Commissioner, Acting National Commissioner, where, for example, the Acting National Commissioner has taken direct responsibility for the performance reviews associated with Program 3, specifically crime investigations. The focus will be on specific underperforming stations, looking, as Brigadier Lobby indicated, at a targeted approach, the performance on indicators versus workload, and the functioning and program of action of these dedicated multidisciplinary management intervention teams. The responsibility for that has already been allocated by the Acting National Commissioner to Lieutenant General Mbunya. The manner in which the multidisciplinary intervention teams are going to be working, the Divisional Commissioner Inspectorate, Lieutenant General Jafta, and the Divisional Commissioner Detective Service, Lieutenant General Moon, will personally lead these multidisciplinary management intervention teams, and these teams will be comprised of members currently located at divisional, provincial, and cluster levels, including the Deputy Provincial Commissioner of Crime Detection, Provincial Heads Inspector, Provincial Heads Detective Service, and functionaries under their command and control. So, for example, including technology management services to look at the auditing of dockets from a system point of view.
Moving on to the... Maybe before going to the operational plan, because we're running a bit out of time for this section, but maybe just on the first few issues, maybe just a few questions from the members, and maybe address to the National Commissioner, Acting National Commissioner. It's clear from the analysis, if we look at pages 35 and 36, it's about the L word. Leadership in that environment, and I think we welcome from the portfolio committee side the appointment of a national coordinator to ensure that that unit is actually being beefed up and there's proper control. But going back also to your presentation a week or so ago about splitting, you know, the current management of the visible and detectives, is this an intermeasure to ensure that you stabilize for the rest of the financial year? Or do you foresee that beyond March
2016, the structure will still be in place. And then the second issue, yesterday, Parliament adopted the adjustment estimates. Now, in terms of Program 3, there's an additional 270 million that's been earmarked for detective services. And I just want to know, is that going to be used in those specific areas that's indicated in the presentation where there is really an urgent need of leadership intervention, but also operational equipment-wise to deal with the serious crime detection rates and bringing it up to the 40%, or especially because if you look at some of those areas, it's really areas in provinces where people have been under siege of criminals for a very long time. So what are you going to do with that 270 million adjustments to bolster the fight against crime? I'll give other members also an opportunity. Honourable Ramasakane and Honourable Molopashi.
No, thank you very much, Honourable Chair and Acting National Commissioner. I think that the presentation is quite good because I think it identifies the problems, does analysis on the problem. Now, as I'm listening to it, and I'm wondering the capacity, with the broader capacity from national to provinces, for them to be able to understand, because ordinarily, this should be what's informed, the strategy and the plan and the real adjustment of the plan. It must be led by analysis and finding out all the gaps and be able to do this is what we're going to do. So do you have, in your view, general capacity in terms of the at the provincial level, leading into structures, I mean to clusters for this kind of work? Because if you don't, if you are not going to be able to jack up on this one, we're going to, this one has got the effect of pulling down. It's a pull down on the perhaps more than two aspects. The one is that the issue about confidence, the confidence in general public, that the police are not necessarily doing anything. If you have a pull down on confidence, the negative flip side of it is people resorting into settling their dispute their own way. There's a township language, they will settle it their own way. So this is really a critical part of the police. And I think, Chair, I'm not sure, but maybe going forward in the new year, we should be able to have a bit of an understanding on the real capacity on the detective side. It's well and good to identify the problems and say this is what we're going to be able to do, but the real capacity when they're taking it the time for those detectives that has to do the work in terms of the docket. Let me just talk about, I mean, that's committing on the over half a million, more than half a million dockets, which you characterize as a old cases backlog. It is a big issue. And probably, I don't know, the acting commissioner, the kind of capacity to be able to deal with that once you're hitting the new cases. Because this issue may well be what informed the issue we raised about closing down docket as undetected docket. What we've seen in Fishet. Suddenly, 4,000 cases are, by stroke of a pen, are closed down as undetected, boom, because of the concern that there is a big number of backlog. So the real question for me is going to be the capacity to be able to deal with that while you are dealing with normal things that you're coming into. So this recovery plan, does it have that teeth and the reach and the footprint to be able to do it? And that's really for me the critical question going forward. And it brings with the money that you mentioned there in terms of what is it that needs to be done. So for me, the commission is going to be that aspect. So we would ask me to, at another time, really focus on that. The year of detective that passed. Having been able to achieve that result that we saw and talked about, the objective that we needed to beef up because we understood it, that this is where we're falling at. But are we making progress there? What is it that we need to do? That the committee would then say, well, going forward to the next budget, if this is going to be the plan that needs to be supported by the committee, this is what we're going to be able to achieve, this is what we want. Clear indication of that kind of a plan. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Ramathani. Honourable Morapasi.
Thanks, Chairperson. I've got just two short questions. Right, my first one is, at what point do you say the pocket is undetected? When it's there for too long, or what? At what point do you say now this pocket is undetected? My second one is General Munu still going to be in Kruger National Park? Professor.
Thank you, Chairperson. I was just thinking to myself, the analysis of performance, I mean, the challenges that are there. I think this has been identified as key, but according to me, there are too many. If they are prioritized, then it means it's a lot of them. I was just thinking of maybe... it might be like identifying a target which you can't manage to reach, because as I was checking page 36 or slide number 36, bullet point number 5, just to give an example, that would be key to me. Because if you don't have a system of linking dockets, I can be arrested and released because the linking system is not there. I would say that has been key. I'm not very sure, but I thought maybe this needs still to be reduced, because it involves resources and so on and so on. I'm not very sure. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, General Passone.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe let me start with that one on page 36, or maybe just a number. Yes, there are a number of issues that warrant attention. The fortunate part of it is that some of them processes are underway to deal with them. For example, that specific one, I think by the end of March, we should be having a fully fledged system up and running to take care of this. So we had said to ourselves, do not leave out what you see as a problem, so that we can then be able to say, how are we doctoring this one and that one going forward, to make sure that we do not find ourselves in the situation where we are in currently. So it is taken care of. In respect of what was on page 30 or slide 38, for example, the designation of General Ngwenya as a coordinator, that is not a permanent arrangement. It's an immediate intervention now, pending the finalization of the structures and the placement of people. So what we have done was to say who is where and what are they dealing with currently. As you know, that General Ngwenya was assigned to manage auxiliary services, which we say someone at a much lower level can manage it. So let me undertake it and coordinate the work that will be done by both General Jafta and General Munu, moving General Munu immediately from just focusing on the division, move him into that area so that he could be where they're supposed to be addressing this situation that we found ourselves in. And maybe at the same time, to answer Honorable Mulevadi's question, he can't be in the Kruger National Park today while we find the detective environment in the current situation. Thus, the directive to say, you can't be in an office. You must go to station. Lead teams at station. Let's go and correct this particular situation. And that will also link up to the adjustment. Obviously, the intervention that we are dealing with is going to consume a lot of resources, because It requires the movement of teams, as you would have seen. It is the national people at provincial, people at cluster, having to move them around the station. So part of the funding will take care of that within that program. If Chair noted that in that program we also talk about the inspectorate people, because as she said, we don't want to go to patients and say we found this wrong. So they are going to have to spend more time at station level to make sure that the situation gets corrected.
There was an issue by Honorable Ramatlakane, maybe it escaped me. I just wanted to be reminded.
Capacity on two levels. The one was our own capacity on various levels to be able to do this analysis, which is very critical, and also the capacity of the detectives. Now, if you look at the presentation that the Brigadier Rani did on 603,000, for example, cases, we are saying some of those are not supposed to be carried by a detective now. Because you will find, if you drill down, that some of those were actually finalized, but someone just never went and updated the system, which when you ask a person now, how many dockets are you carrying? The person is saying, I've got 300 dockets. Whereas maybe 100 or 150 of them were long ago finalized. Now the person is saying, this is what I have. Now, that data integrity and interrogating each and every docket as to what the status is bound to reduce the number of dockets that an individual is carrying. And that is where we talk about improving the effectiveness and efficiency. Honorable Chair, you have been asking questions. What is the ideal number of dockets that a detective must carry? Now, you can't answer that question by simply saying there are 2 million dockets, there are an X number of detectives, you divide it and you say 500, for example, because the number of detectives per station varies from one to the other, from one size to the other. A station, for example, some stations, smaller stations, will not have a case maybe that exceeds 100, but there are stations which have got a case that exceeds 2,000, 3,000. Now, if you just simply total number of dockets divide, it is giving you a wrong picture, because there is a detective somewhere whose station is generating far less and who is carrying lesser dockets. So we are trying to correct that by going into this backlog and say, why are we still having these cases? Are they really still have to be open, being carried by someone, or were they supposed to be gone? So that is more at the operational level. But at a level where we talk about the analysis and so on, the beauty of it, Chair, is that the people that I'm drawing in, I don't have to employ them from elsewhere. They are already within the system. You just have to know where they are and utilize what we have. So while it is not full capacity on all levels, there is capacity to start with. Going forward, we will, continue to increase what we have, because you can't do operations and everything without having a very clear picture of what is it that you need to target. As we have said, you can never have a house, a policeman for each and every house, which means we must be smart in our approach, have directed or targeted interventions to deal with the issues. Thanks, sir.
Commissioner, just one issue to just get on record. The Minister of Finance in the MTHF statement indicated when there was request for further, let's say, funding flowing from Parliament, the issue of training came very much to the fore. We will focus in the 30th of January on the issue of training and ZAPS, IPET and so on, but is part of this 270 million or this whole exercise, is training part of that? Because a lot of the issues raised by the Brigadier relates to training or people in a detective environment that are well trained. If you can just get an assurance from you in that regard. Honourable Mabasi.
Allocation of doctors. Is the experience also considered, say for instance, so-and-so is very good in murder cases, and you don't pile him up with other cases in addition to the murder cases, so that must focus on the serious one. Is that considered?
General Batami?
Honorable Chair, first, the training is integral going forward. We realized yesterday, for example, when we engaging campaign, how far people have departed from the basis of policy. So the training must be an integral part of our back to basis and enhancing of our capabilities to give us a chance to do better for the people of this country. And in respect of the experience, definitely it has to be taken into consideration. We can't have a situation where here is someone who is just fresh from training, and you already give him or her complicated cases of murder or whichever serious cases we need. You recall, I think it was in the place where there was talk about uniform investigation. We see that as a breeding ground for your investigators, because you give them less serious the cases to investigate, and out of that you are able to see who can do it, who can't do it, and then you can, as they gain experience, begin to move them into the areas where they are taking more serious cases. Thanks, sir.
Thank you. Let us go into the operational plan, but I think if we can just have highlights and maybe focus on the M&E at the back, because I think what we will do is in the third week of January to invite General Ngwenya to the committee to give us a briefing on the progress and what are going on in terms of executing the plan. You're welcome.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I'll run through the plan very quickly, and I think you will see some of the issues that have been raised by the Honourable Members are included in the plan. You have the priorities on the left-hand side, the key actions on the right. The first priority for us would be improve and measure the management of case dockets. The first issue there, conduct an analysis of system utilization. This is specifically by detective commanders to check and see what the extent of utilization of the available systems is by these members. The conducting of a briefing session with intervention team members, the general referred to the session that was held in Gauteng yesterday. Those sessions have already been scheduled going forward and will be led by either General Patlani or General Ngwenya. The conducting of interventions at identified underperforming stations, the general referred to the back to basics issue. And what you see listed there are the things that should be done by detectives on a daily basis. So, for example, the conducting of inspections, the 24-hour inspections, brought-forward inspections, the monitoring of the daily productivity of investigating officers, both through the pocketbook as well as the docket progress system, the utilization of informers, the conducting of weekly accountability sessions between detective commanders and investigating officers, something which is vital because there the investigating officer learns from the detective commander and decided by him or her the effective function of detective service centers at Colonel and Brigadier Station, the determining of the skills gap, an issue that you referred to, Honorable Chair, and then the initiating of corrective action where required. In addition to that, the assessing of the role and functions of the detective court case officers, an issue that has been raised by this committee in the past, in relation to detective commanders and group leaders, and then ensuring the effective utilization of the Provincial Operational Command Center or the War Room, an integrated capability that we have at our disposal to assist in the investigation process. Priority number two looks at implementing measures to continuously update the system to capture actual performance. Here again, it's back to basics, determining if CAS audits are done to ensure correlation between the CAS docket, the case docket, the CAS itself, and the SATS 184 or the fingerprint register, correcting the delayed or non-submission of result of trial, ensuring the inclusion of ADRs and into trial-ready and conviction data going forward, and then conducting an audit to update and discount all DEI and IDOT cases
in relation to detentions and convictions. The conducting of the docket age analysis, I won't talk too much to that because that's basically what Brigadier Rob showed you. But what we need to do with that going forward is to correlate the brought forward date on cash with each docket, checking each docket to see what the brought forward date is on the docket and whether it compares with what is on cash, and then to determine the means of finalization of these outstanding dockets. Assess docket allocation methodology. This is the issue that was raised by the Honourable Member in terms of matching the complexity of dockets with the experience and the competence of investigating officers. There we will conduct a pilot study once we've done the analysis and do a rollout of the pilot study once it has been completed. The verifying of wanted and cancelled suspect lists. This is talking to the purification of unwanted suspects, the auditing of the wanted suspect list, checking to see whether the cancellations have been received and acknowledged at our LCRCs, auditing the cancellation list against the circulation list, and then activating our provincial tracking team to actually go out and to trace and arrest the suspects that we are looking for. Verifying the manner of closure of case dockets is undetected and withdrawn. Firstly, to conduct an audit, the dockets closed is undetected and withdrawn on the system to compare it with what is on cash and correcting those identified irregularities. Determining timelines for the investigating of categories of crime. This is where we actually look at the past to check and see what the historical data is telling us about how long it takes to investigate certain crimes, so that we can have standard resolution rates, and this will actually assist in the performance management of detectives going forward. The effective management of crime scenes is a key issue for us, looking as well at the correct handling of firearms that are found at crime scenes, and developing key performance indicators to adequately measure the attendance of crime scenes going forward. The effective management of exhibits, there looking at our SAP 13 stores as well as our registers, to ensure that forensic exhibits are submitted to our laboratories within 7 days. Optimizing the utilization of forensic evidence and leads, the analysis of the utilization of these leads, ensuring that those dedicated provincial task teams that need to be in place to only follow up on the forensic leads are in place and are working, and then to elicit the support of the Division of Crime Intelligence to actually look for analyze and look for the suspects that we cannot identify but that we have linked to crime scenes. Ensuring the taking of buccal samples in terms of Schedule 8 of the DNA Act, they're checking to see that station commanders are actually doing this on a weekly basis. Developing the sister solution to determine case docket links based on forensic evidence-based leads. General Pathmani dealt with this issue. It is currently under investigation, under development, and it will be completed by the 31st of March. Effective management of bail applications to improve performance. There to investigate the introduction of automatic conditions regarding bail with the DOJCS. So, for example, undetected persons without residential, undocumented persons without residential and business addresses. The tracking and tracing of dismissed appeals, a very successful pilot project was run in Gauteng to duplicate this project and actually identify these individuals, trace and arrest them. The reintroduction of the uniform capability to reduce the workload on detectives. We need to assess the pilot study that has been done in 2 provinces to actually check and see what the impact has been on the first semester performance, that is the first 2 quarters of 15-16. Addressing and activating relevant stakeholders that detectives acquire within the investigating value chain, conducting a stakeholder analysis to understand what is needed by these internal and external stakeholders within the investigation value chain, and then implementing stakeholder monitoring tool at identified stations. The operationalizing of the organized crime threat analysis, we need to finalize the office strategy. We need to start, based on that strategy, to start managing individual OCTA projects linked to the various levels of organized crime threats that we have within the country, and then finalizing that by developing an implementation plan to actually structure the way in which the organized crime threat analysis is managed in the organization. Looking at the monitoring and evaluation, the National Management Intervention Coordinator, General Mbwenya, will actually consolidate and report on these management interventions. And the Acting National Commissioner has indicated that the next Program 3 performance review session will be conducted on the 9th of December, during which comparative monitoring of the 12 detective service performance indicators will be conducted nationally, provincially, and per underperformance station, looking at the kind of information that Brigadier Ravi showed you. Presentations will be done on the implementation of the detective recovery plan by these management intervention teams, talking to the turnaround that has been achieved at these underperforming stations, and then ensuring that there is accountability within the process, bringing out the Deputy Provincial Commissioner's Crime Detection and Provincial Heads Detective Service in to actually talk to the top 10 worst performing stations, looking at their performance in terms of the indicators and the workload that they have to deal with. From a provincial crime combating forum point of view, a similar approach, weekly monitoring of the implementation of the priorities and key actions by the management intervention teams, also looking at that weekly comparative monitoring of the 12 performance indicators, and then feedback by cluster coordinators and detective commanders on the top 10 worst performing stations, also taking into consideration performance on indicators versus workload. Thank you, Chair.
General McClellan, is the final word from you on this section.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. To us, it is an exciting plan, and we want to see this translated into action. We have got no doubt that it is going to take us a long way in gaining what we would have lost and improving on civil delivery. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, General Pani, your team. We welcome today's presentation. We think it's quite important that SAPS must go back to basics, because in the next 2 weeks we're going to do constituency work, and we go to the police stations and to communities, and of course the feedback that we usually get is very important, and we'll look at these interventions. Maybe the last part, I think what we will need to have is on Wednesday, 27 January, to have General Mbwenya coming to the committee as the national coordinator and brief us on the progress so far in the implementation. So we will of course welcome that. With regard to the first issue we've raised this morning, that you've raised from your side, and I think we appreciate the honesty and frankness of bringing the issues with regard to the annual report to the committee's attention. We think it's very serious. That report was signed off by the accounting officer. It was tabled in Parliament. And we will ask our researchers to give us a briefing on Thursday, 28 January. Thursday, 28 January. Also to look at your findings, but not our own findings, on the inconsistencies, on the performance information, also the broader issue of statistical information, and after the briefing from the researchers, we will come with a solution, and if need be, we'll have to go to the House. Furthermore, we think it's important, Acting National Commission, that you also look at your strategic advice environment, and also again the issue of N&E. Because if that information filtered through the whole process, although it was not on the door of watch, but it's a risk to the organization, if this information comes through and it's then finally adopted and placed before Parliament, so this issue will have to also reflect in the BRRR next year, but I mean, it's a serious issue and we will have to follow it up in the third week of January. So thank you very much. Honourable members, we will take a 10-minute break. Then we will deal with the PCM presentation, and if there's any questions flowing from the issues of Petra, but then the inspecting judge, I think he will be arriving soon, but we will take the inspecting judge after SAPS on the DPCI report, so let's take just a 10-minute break. Thank you. I'm a cop.
Parliament's last meeting yesterday. So the last day. But they still have a lot of outstanding stuff that they have to. So we're supposed to meet yesterday for a document and report, but there's no shelf.
When I came now, a lot of stuff. I still look like what
I'm saying.
I just want to find out how I was a chance to stand there or the parliament.
No, Parliament said, the speaker said they can't strike inside anymore. Yeah, because they disrupted the sitting on Tuesday.
And
there's been so much police.
It was here.
Yeah.
We were doing this.
Yeah.
I saw a TV. I didn't die. They said to die.
Yeah.
I'm so sure I said to you. You can see these are such people.
Yes.
The end. So, but I was asking myself if that is, if that continues, for how long will it continue?
Yeah.
You can
be answered.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to get my yes here.
No, no, no.
Yeah. It's not with everything.
Yes, yes, yes. But immediately,
immediately,
yeah, let's say if the result is clear,
yeah,
go on
that's the plan, yeah.
But that's because I went to that guy, they think I was ready. Yeah, but it's just because in a simple, in a simple problem, there will be a doctor. I asked him,
yeah.
I said, my name is not allowed.
Oh.
It can't be. Yeah, people, some people have requested before, but it's not allowed.
It's just too late.
Yeah, I don't know what's wrong. But it would be a jealous.
Good morning.
Because I wasn't sure if there was going to be anything. But I'll see if there's coffee. Yeah.
Rodney, miss 2 minutes. Right, honourable members, we're going to continue. Meanwhile, I just want to welcome the inspecting judge of the DPCIS, Judge Musa, and his team. Welcome to you. We will be with him in the next hour or so. So welcome. Members will remember that the next topic on the table would be the PKM presentation by General Chesi, as well as any questions we had from the TIPRA presentation already received. Members will remember we already received copies of those presentations. So if members brought it along with them, because So without ado, over to the National Commissioner and his team.
Honourable Chair, thank you very much. We appreciate this opportunity. We hope that we will move much closer to closure on these matters, because amongst others, Chair, it impacts big time, as you know, on our spending. It impacts a lot on the functioning. I was led with the feedback that I had received from General Chesi on these matters, and I'm going to allow him that opportunity to take us through. Thanks, Chair.
General Pasani, General Chesi, you're welcome.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, General. Good morning, Honourable Members. I'm going to take you through the PKM contract from the time it was established. But I thought before I even talk to the PKM itself, Honourable Chair, to reflect just a little bit on the role of PKM in the previous presentation that was done, that it is amongst other systems like these that we've assisted, you know, part of the problems that we are sitting with the detectives. For example, this system is meant to assist the police in SAP-30 to be able to detect the exhibits. So if the system is in place, at any point in time you can know what type of exhibits, in which areas are they available, you know, why are they there for so long in the time frame, and you can actually track the real track and trace. When did it come in, by who, when did it leave, by who, what channels did it go through. So the PKM is one of the very critical softwares that we require for enabling the visible environment, supporting the detective environment in the exhibit management to be able to run. Now, this presentation is all-inclusive, Chair. It will talk to the establishment of PKM from its very onset, where we are now, what has been spent, you know, what are the dynamics within the PKM contract, and it will seek to resolve all number of issues that are coming up from the PKM since its establishment. It's got about 14 elements that I will talk to in the next slide, please, Kevin. So I will, each of those 14 sections that I've listed, the contents, I will talk to as I go through. I would have person started with the last one, section 12, 13 and 14, because it gives a real overall of what PM was called, you know, but I'll do that at the end for various reasons. So I will just start with the PM as my phones from the time it was submitted. Yeah, this slide talks to the milestone, the timelines. When was the PKM established, or when was it initiated? Because it's now 7 years ago that this PKM was initiated, and if it is a 7-year project, it would have now been having some fruits, but I'm afraid to be saying that it's still in the development to some great extent. That's why it is important for me that I highlight the timeline of what would have happened, to just bring it to the fore, to the honourable members, to see the challenges around the PKM contract. In April 2008, the request for bid was published by CETA, you know, for provision of both ISICT goods and staff for the establishment, maintenance, support, continuous improvement of an automated property control and exhibit management. That's what it stands for, property control and exhibit management. So all types of properties, be it firearms, be it drugs, be it knives, be it exhibits, any form, shoes, what is confiscated from the crime scene or from the suspect, it is supposed to be the solution within service domain that was to be established for a 3-year period. The bid was advertised, the request for bid was published on the 18th, and then the closing date was in June the 27th. The committee said 3 days later, after closing date, you know, starting with the evaluation process, which evaluation process was provided to CETA recommendation committee on the 21st October 2008 to make sure that the process continues. But in this page, I wanted to just highlight something also, that it was in April as it went forth. It was in October, 6 months later, that this process was in the evaluation. So from the CETA experience on the number of contracts that are with us with CETA, this is quite a significant timeline. It is one of the fastest that was established. In 2008, still in December, the letter was sent to staff's CEO of the time that the BAC had approved the recommendation report. And then CETA had recommended that the award be given to UNICEF. At the time, it was called UNICEF. The company is one of the multinational companies, which got a number of subcontracting elements underneath it. But the major bidder who had provided this process at the time was UNICEF, to whom the award was awarded. During the process of time, you will see as I continue with the program chair, I no longer refer to UNICEF, and then I refer to PATS, because during the process or during the period of the award, subsequently they were bought over by company BITES, which now UNICEF became BITES. In 2009 February, they approved the recommendation by CETA, the award was now done. The letter of acceptance was done on the 5th of February, and then, but on the 30th, this is one of the critical milestones that then began within the staff environment. So on the 13th of February 2009, the contract negotiation started, you know, in terms of what must be in it, you know, what is the all-inclusive, all the SLAs, you know, in terms of establishing the work. And you will see as I talk each one of them, it went to give some breakdowns, you know, to say what will those modules be called in terms of the project milestones that were to reach within specific periods, and all those were given names. Those figures I will also refer to as part of the content as of the presentation, so that I talk to them in context. And then the last part talks to the proposal. It included the replacement of M's. At the time, the forensic science laboratories shared, they were utilizing a system that was called Exhibit Management System. At the time, it was called M's. And then this Exhibit Management System did the same thing of track and trace. This track and trace solution is also what is critical in the criminal law forensic procedures that has been revised, because part of that requirement is that those exhibits must be traced, or part of the maintenance of the chain of custody, which is very critical in the court processes, particularly criminal court processes. So the M's system was effectively utilized in the forensic environment, but then there were elements within the PKM version that went in the EMS version, which were very critical in terms of the biometrics, for example, in the chain had to be determined. specifically, you know, moving away from the pathway to the literal persons that moved the exhibit. So the system was properly modified. So part of those proposals then were to say, as PCAM, as the whole solution of PCAM, we would want to replace what is existing within the forensic environment in the form of M. We want to have a track and trace solution, which is not only going to be focusing on the forensic science laboratories, but on the overall sub, you know, to provide an exhibit tracking solution for the police. October 2010, a year later, an agreement for the establishment, maintenance, and support of PCAM within sub between Unitas and SAS for Science, and this agreement then was for 3 years. So it means, and this is October 2010, agreement is signed, so by default the agreement would then lapse 3 years later, which would be October of 2018. But in a month or two later, orders were then issued for what was called Statement of Works 1 and Statement of Works 2. I'm going to talk about those. Those are part of what reflect the total cost of the PCAM element. But the real initiation period of the PCAM, if you have a look there, if PCAM, it started now in January 2011. But here you will recall that earlier on I said that the award was made almost 18 months or 2 years earlier. You know, but when you look at the time that the project gets to be initiated, executed, that is very in between. A number of processes might have happened now during the negotiations, you know, clarifications of the user requirements by staff, you know, identifications of the different categories. There's no lot of explanation that is coming out from the environment to say why did this project delay so long for it to be put into place. So I'll talk then into each of those statements of work, just in detail share, and then I'll just bring also the timelines into equation. This slide, the person breaks down now in total, it gives a quick overview of what is the cost of the development of the solution. Now, this is the functional elements of the software. There is no hardware in it. There is no desktop. There is no computer. There is no biometrics. It's the system itself, the development area. It includes cost of expert, cost of design, of architecture, all those technical languages to develop a software solution. This is the element which is providing a reflection of what happened within the PCAM contract and what each of those deliverables entails. This project was broken down into 5 phases, and then each phase was called a statement of work, and then it was categorized into 5 different categories. The first one, it talked to the PCAM project management service, and that element will break down also to talk what entails the statement of work one, why was it copied at 27 million in relation to statement of work 2, for instance, that was costed at 21 million at conclusion of the statement of work and each of those. But that's, in summary, all the 5 statements of work or all the 5 phases that were agreed to, that were signed on by SAR, had then totaled to that value of 183 million. So it means within this 183 million, who would have then taken care of all the functionalities and all the models that were defined according to the scope that was defined by staff to be able to achieve then a solution that will be overall used in staff to then do all those exhibit track and tracing solutions within the broader staff to then assist these calls, assist the detective environment to be able to track and know where our exhibits went and all the processes internally. Now I'm going to take to each one of them as a separate tool, the statement of work one. Just as a summary, just the agreed total there, which is reflected, this slide just confirms to say that these costs do not include any PCAM hardware, whether it were barcode printers or scanners or biometric devices or consumables that go with those. It was a separate cost that was reflected to the software aspects of the software that was to be developed. Now, the statement of work one share was talking to the project management deliverables. For any last software development, software development has got 6 phases. It's got the requirements, gathering, and analysis. It is in the phase where the person who will develop the system would gather information from the users to say, who is going to use this system? So the who part will be saying, it will be the people within these 4. What is it that they have to be able to utilize the system? Do they have the knowledge of computers? Can they be able to operate computers? you try to determine the type of person that will be able to utilize the system, so that when you design a system, it will be talking to the expertise levels of the person that will be utilizing the system. Now, in the SAPS, it's got three different categories of people that are having, you know, information or insights on the computer methods. If you have a specialized environment, the forensic people will be at ease because a minimum requirement, there is an NKF6 qualification. But you have the detectives people. If you analyze the age of the detectives people, you find people that are quite mature, some of whom were born before computers. It might be a little bit difficult, you know, to want to entertain or interact with the program. So all those different phases of people, or perhaps the people at the visual environment, which is a little bit of a combination of the two, you know, who will utilize the system. But overall, you would want the requirement that you define to be able to cater for all the different categories. So each requirement then will be defined according to each project template as it will be placed in there. So the complexity thereof will be showcased by the level in which that document will be pitched. So in the statement of first one, having analyzed what we're going to be the main focus of PCAM within the different environments in the forensics, we know this is what we do. In the settings, this is what we will do. In the state garages, this is what we will do. In the overall cast environment, this is what we will do. After having analyzed all those areas where the solution was going to be utilized, then you would draft the specific templates that will then meet those categories. And that was then the statement of which one. And that all that amount has totaled to 28 million, which would then reflect the total that was then presented in the slide. So, and this was achieved according to Ben. If you look at the last sentence right here, it will say that this was within the financial year 2011 when the contract was not awarded, which had concluded in 2 years later into the financial year 2013-14, you know, depending on the various, the business units that were targeted for the solution. The next one will be statement of work two. Statement of work two in its totality, Chairperson, focused on the forensic science environment. This is the element in the model of PCAM that we're to address not only the replacement of the M's, but the enhancement of the M's to be able to cater for additional items. In this category, for instance, here, we had made provisions for what is the integration between the exhibit management system as well as the RFIDs. I think the portfolio chairperson had visited the forensic environment and they had seen the storage areas which are remotely controlled with the RFID technology, you know, where we then wanted to know that if the RFID technology talks to the PCAM, then you can at any point know where is this exhibit, in which room is it, in which shelf it is, in which shelf number, in which location. So you would be able to determine the exhibit to the last dot, well, exactly where is it located in a particular building. You know, so that was the module then that was quickly finalized. That was the module that was rolled out in the forensics environment. That was the module that was bought, part of which was a off-the-shelf product, but which was enhanced then to be able to fit the existing forensic environment, you know, to provide a second phase solution, which environment was successful. And that process, together with the statement of work one, happened concurrently in 2010-11 until 2014, and it had amounted to 71 million rand for the forensics laboratories. So the next slide, Chairperson.
So you say that's working well and it's in place.
That is working very well, Chairperson. It is in place. It is the environment uses it in all the areas where forensics is, in all four provinces.
So section 13 is supposed to be a walk in the park.
It could have been a good question, Chairperson. I wish I would have said yes to it, but that's where the complexity started. The next one. This lecture wanted to just show you even the total number of users per environment, because the picker solution itself, you can determine at any given point how many of what type of users are locating and logging into the system, so those are statistics within the forensic environment where Vision 1.1 works very well. And then
you would say it was good value for money.
Yes, Chairperson, this was very good value for money. It still is good value for money because the product within the forensic environment was absolutely well. And then this is the statistics then, the total of registered users. It will tell you the total transactions that were done within the PCAM environment. This was until the end of September, so every time when you log in the request, you will tell
you know, how many transactions were done at a given time. So you would know how many storage locations, how many people were registered, has it been handed over by biometrics. But what is very interesting here is the second last bullet, which says biometric handover transactions conducted. Because with that, I can be able to determine that transactions were handed between individuals 15 million times. Every time a person takes over an exhibit or a cash file, they log in with their finger instead of the password, so it transfers for myself directly to General Katani. Then he must also receive the exhibit. It is an important requirement within the chain of custody processes, part of which addresses the concern that was raised in terms of disappearing of exhibits within the environment. So you would know who was the last person to handle that exhibit. Was it at the point of reception or was it at the point of dispatch? But you can always tell at which point was the exhibit lost and now a person can distance themselves from their own fingers. So this is this part of the framework. This part here talks to the expenditure of statement of work 2. But in this slide, I've also combined what is called statement of work 6. You will see as I continue the presentation, in statement of work 6, that was included as part of the extension to the PCAM contract. You recall, Chairperson, the contract period was 3 years. It was 3 years. It was to end at the end of December 2013. And at the end of 2013, this contract was extended for a year, and then it had to end in December 2014. But what was the purpose of the extension? It will be exactly what I want to talk to you about in terms of what was rolled out in the PCAM product, and then it is just that highlight. But part of the extension also, Chairperson, had to do with the renewal of the licenses for the 1.1 version. So the licenses for the 1.1 version for the PROT 1 January to December 13 amounted to 82 million, which licenses included in the technical as well as the functional support, where some adjustments, with some renewal of licenses that were detected, you know, updating the software operating system has actually costed that amount. But that's where, as part of the extension of the contract and part of the company developing the 1X, there were a number of challenges that were detected, you know, in case of in relation to the amount that was done to establish the system, as well as the amount that was then detected to renew the license, which didn't really end up, you know, to say that you can't renew a license at 50% of your cost of developing a system. It didn't work out very well. And part of what is taken for evaluation also to effectively see, you know, the cost and the value for money in that element. But the contract ended then, Chairperson, formally in December 2014. With the challenges that I'm going to be talking about in the next slide, we had extended this contract from 1 January to the 31st of March in 2015 to address what the contractor had said could not, needed the time to address, which were not part of what was passed during the development phase of the PCAM solution. So this part is the part that you correctly asked, if one word, why is the speaker solution in totality not having a free ride like the one that is in the lab? But that's where it all started. That part of the module for statement of West 3, this module was then focusing to the visible environment, to the program 2 environment. And the business requirements that came from there, as well as the type of requests that the environment had made, differed significantly from the business requirement as they were tabled from the forensics laboratory. The visible environment wanted to go to the specific details, to the dots. The system was to be developed to say, now we are taking a firearm, now we are taking a vehicle or a door of the vehicle. It was too specific. What then happened when the architectural design were done for the PCAM-1X, they looked into all the basic requirements of the PCAM for the visual environment and they attempted to do a functional design that was going to meet the requirements of the 1X solution to be able to support the visual environment. But in that functional analysis as well, the developers said they are also going to be incorporating what 1-1 that is utilized in the forensics laboratories already has to make now a solidified PCAM solution. No longer a 1-1, no longer a 1X. So this version of PCAM was supposed to derive from what was already existing to provide a kitchen solution, which is now a unit. Now we were not going to be seeing two separate issues any longer, but then we were going to be seeing one solution. So this part of the PM was for statement of work 3, then it defined that what must be in there, taking possession of a property, registering it, safeguarding it, which are part of what was required for the 13, and then it amounted to 13 million. The next slide, please, Sarah. But when it began to come to this environment, it, on the statement of work 4, which is that now this is between the period of 2013 and 2012-13 financial year to the end of the contract, because this was now the final year in which the contract was supposed to be coming onto base. You know, some of the things that were supposed to be included was the development, the installation of what was already developed into, you know, a training environment, into a production or pre-production environment to see all those details that were given to the developers of the system, were they taken into account? Are they going to be enable the software that is developed to integrate or to talk to all others that are already there, amongst others, the CAS, the GRIM, you know, the RFID systems in the lab, you know, and all other systems? You know, this statement of work 4 is almost the fourth stage of the last cycle, where it says, would you be able to deploy it, to test it at that time frame? Because that's how it was supposed to say, by this time when you get here, we are supposed to be testing now this solution to see if it's going to do what it was supposed to do, and what that process was costing 71 million. Now, in that phase, a number of issues were identified with the solution now that was already developed. Now, among other things that were raised as we were following up on the PKM1X development and the rolling out of the solution was that the system is providing too big the sizes for the data packages. You know, it means part of what has been drawn in will be impacting negatively on the spaces, for example, in the network. You won't be able to transmit, you know, a number of activities with the solution. Simply meaning it is not properly designed. The foundation of the system as it was developed was not properly done. You know, so if when we drilled down into the foundation or the architectural design, you know, a number of queries came on board today that no, there weren't any expertise to the solution. You know, then we begin to realize that it looks like there's a problem with the development of kitchen. You know, incorrectly implemented business.
That 71 million was paid. With all these things still on the table.
Correct, Jefferson. The 71 million was paid. I've got the records, you know, the documentation that showed that from the environment, it was accepted that what was meant should be delivered, were delivered, you know, in from the process point of view, which makes it hard what the complication is within sourcing of those types of expertise when you yourself itself do not necessarily have the expertise to the level where the company that provides the service would have. You know, one of the reasons why we go in a bid process is because we don't have people that would develop systems. So you rely on the expertise of the company to say this has been done. The only time that was realized that indeed it was done is when you put it to the test. When you put it to the test, you realize that no, what you said you did is actually not true, because this is what you experience now. This is the issue that are coming forth out of what you have seen that you have provided. You know, so what was in PKM1 was, what was PKM1X, which was said it was going to be a very smooth integration. It was just not happening. There were lots of boxes that were not just meshing together. And then it was apparent that we were sitting with system design issues that could not be resolved. And if you add all those millions, we will realize that we are now at almost 140 million that has been paid. Which 140 million cannot now tell that it is actually the outcome that was expected. The next slide, please. This was now made imminent because now we have developed a system for VisPol. You want the VisPol people to see that test was done internally by the people within the environment. So perhaps maybe put it to the production environment, let the VisPol people and users themselves test the system, perhaps, you know, from the also maybe to eliminate that type of biasness, you know, to say that have you done what you could or have you not done what you could. You know, so these were the outcomes from the people that were to use the system before to say that, no, this system is complicated, not user-friendly, it's very difficult to use, you know, there's this substitute register look and feel that was required by the VISPOL is not there, because at the time of business requirement collection, you want a system which is easy, as I said. It should quickly reflect a substitute register look and feel, but the users at VISPOL to whom the system was targeted, you know, just affect impressions that no, we think we are having problems with the, but the further interrogation of the system, you know, reveal that system inconsistencies. For instance, the first thing that system must do is when you put the biometrics in, it must identify you as a person that is logging in with the credentials that were provided, but the system appears to have a little bit of bugs in that area, which was too complex to see. The last bullet share was one of the critical things that had come out, which appeared that they were addressing the system, which when, you know, they amongst other things, it included the need to ensure the chain of custody that was uncompromised, all those that were not addressed as yet. Incorrect or duplicated data can be entered on the item. For example, the exhibit back, would you know, Chairperson, that when the police officers go to the crime scene, they take the exhibit back, each bag has got its unique identifier. In the form of the barcode. So if the PCAM can read the same barcode and read it twice and log it as if it is two different barcodes, then it is not providing what it's meant to provide. So there were a number of issues that we identified, which then were taken back to the development stage, you know, so that the developers were given due consideration to correct the bugs, because they had said during the engagements that we had, there were smaller bugs that they could correct, which they then apparently corrected within the 3 year, the 3 months additional extension period from January to March 2015.
It was still bites.
It was still bites. It is still bites. No new names as yet. I'm not sure now, but it is still bites. The last one was put into the statement of work 5, which is a different statement of work share. You would recall that each one has got its intended purpose, each one has been scoped for a specific amount, specific issues that was to be done, but you would recall up till now there's only one success, it's only the statement of work 2. The rest of the other statement of work, we haven't realized the success as yet. Statement of work 5, the arrangement there, agreement was reached, which is up and by today that PKM1X, the merit functionality will cater for forensic property items, you know, and then all those that are also currently managed by PKM11. It was in this statement of work where a complete solution was going to be called now PKM, and no longer version 1.1 and version 1.X, because that version was supposed to incorporate all the basics that the forensics had and all, you know, the new requirements that the staff environment had, you know, and then it could be utilized by staff as an agreed solution, you know, but surely because of the lack of integrations between the two systems, by default, this statement of facts also could not meet its intended purpose. It was not successful. This part here is almost the last part of the statement of work as part of the kitchen solution. It was talking to the extension of the contract between BICE, because when we presented before the portfolio at the time, Chair, you would recall that at the time that we get the intervention, it was when I said it appears that the mediator that will be required from BICE is alleging they've done all that they could according to staff requirements, staff is saying, but when we put these things to the test, you are not meeting our requirements, we then had to refer to the CSIR for evaluation. This process is still with the CSIR evaluation, and then following which the outcomes will also come before the committee so that it is then tabled, because we could not continue with all those different deliberations between staff and BICE, you know, because somewhere we have to find a correct closure and also the means to recover all the costs if the outcomes of the investigations are just as such. But the end of
week... Sorry, Dale, did BICE agree on the CSIR as an independent auditor to get the verifications?
Well, they didn't have much of a choice here. It was the BICE weren't necessarily consulted for the process because... they are of the view that they've done what they could. They were anticipating that the contract be extended further for another year, which I thought I couldn't justify further extensions. Anyway, General Kuzo was not going to allow his procurement processes. Okay. And this is the current status now settled on the 1X. PTN has been referred to independent assessment. But it is also important to note, Chairperson, that having referred to the independent assessment was also the observation that in my own environment there were no key expertise or key experts that would have determined or would have picked up at a point in time that something was going wrong within the project. Of course, for the lack of the very skills that we had sought from the private sector, had he had those skills anyway, it would have been, they would have been provided. So we had referred this camp to the CSIR independent evaluation, you know, and the part that I'm requesting a lot from the CSIR environment to realize was the financial value of the delivery to date. It means with what they had as cooperation between ourselves, between the specification that was published, between the requirements as it was defined by staff, and to what I said delivered in terms of what we agreed on, was this is her financial value. Could I have paid 71 million for statement of X-ray? Could I at least have paid 20 million? Maybe? What informed those costs? That's part of what they've got to determine as a value analysis. The stability of the received deliverables for use, you know, by the saying, the reason they continued with the progress is because staff also kept on agreeing to what they produced as something that is workable. So that's why the two, there would be a real need for that mediation between. The third one is to determine the scope of the work necessary to ensure the optimal return on investments, because I am in no position to can say that the money was just hey, tough. At some point in time it must come and actually do what it was meant to do, which was to develop the green trace and trace solution for the environment concern. And then the final remaining scope of work to be to complete the project, because then after they assess everything that is within their domain, they then have to tell you how much time or how much work still needs to be done on the development so that you then realize the PTM as the solution. You know, to then do the scope of work that is determined. From both sides, they still maintain that they've done 90% of the development work. They only did it at 10% by the extension. You know, perhaps the percentages are also not properly qualified. Maybe from our understanding, maybe it's a different take. But CSIR, as part of their evaluation, required BITES to also come on board to provide their input, the same way that they would do with us, you know, to try to determine where did everything go wrong. But with PTM as it currently stands, with the software aspect of it, only the 1.1 version, which is in the forensic environment, which has custom design for forensic purposes, it is quite detailed. This is a bit difficult to roll out, you know, to the stations in the current status as it is, you know, given the number of the people in my environment call it iteration, that in the 1.1 version that wouldn't necessarily being at the 1X version, that's why there was a need for a solution. However, we are looking into, you know, how to optimize that 1.1 to be able to go through the digital environment, you know, also taking factors into account like the cost elements thereof, you know, to be able to roll forward. You recall, Chairperson, I said with the 1.1 solution for the statement of work 1, it took 71 million to develop, but 35 million to maintain the licenses, so that those cost elements are part of what the financial value is that is going to be checked. In the meantime, the International Commissioner had allowed us to even pursue further all the available systems within the environment, because within the PKM environment also there's an RFID solution which also has a basic element of a track and trace. It's quite basic. It's quite basic to be able to be tested within the policing, SAT 13's environment. You know, when we come back in the next time, we'll be able to say we have tested the solution that is provided with the RFID solution, you know, as it is already part of the ownership of the licenses of SAC in the forensic environment. But we are also going to see how the outcome of the PCAM goes, so that the most feasible one will then take place to go out to the various stations. The next one, please. Now, the part Chairperson talks to the important element of what is called the Schedule D of the PCAM contract. And this one, honorable members have asked many a time to be saying that, why do you have this thing as part of PCAM? And what is in this PCAM contract? So this part of the presentation highlights everything that was called PCAM, which was not necessarily PCAM. What I have dealt with already is the solution that was called PCAM. But these were additional peripheral, or what was going to allow PCAM to be able to function and beyond, some of which has absolutely nothing to do with PCAM, but they were part of what was formed at the time of that procurement vehicle, a big schedule that was called Schedule D, and this chairperson was called from the time of General Tele. It was that big Schedule D which was signed, you know, under those conditions to say what were the contents of the Schedule D in it. But these ones then cost, break down the cost of the PCAM to the value, all what was spent. Because one of the questions that I continually get is, how much did you spend for PCAM? So the first part showed the PCAM as a software. This last part showed the Schedule D, which was coupled to PCAM, which has got elements that were within this contract as it was awarded together. And then it has all those things, barcode printer, the thermal printer, the crystal ribbons. This page here of these elements, these are the support of the software of the PCAM. So these are pretty relevant to the PCAM solution, and they also put us 50 million. Because you, for example, you couldn't use the PCAM software for the forensic environment chairperson unless you had the barcode readers as well, because somebody must read the barcodes and they must be remodeled and so forth. The next one, Kevin. And these ones, chairperson, that's from the Schedule D as an attachment to PCAM. Some of the procurement was made from the TMS environment, some of the procurement was made from the FSL environment, and this slide shows some of the procurement that was done by TMS, but for a different environment, whether it's forensic services, this for PSS, and you name them. And also, all these, the digital cameras, handheld light sources, LabWare is another solution within the forensic environment. So this one is also to manage samples. This was part of the preparation of the criminal law or aspects with the backup shops, amongst others. The next one, and all the LabWares, the light sources, the MEX IDs, you recall part of the MEX IDs, those are the devices that are used in the crime scenes to determine, you know, the fingerprints of the wanted suspects at the point of being arrested at the scene, and all those many items that were bought under the PCAM. Next page, please. The Polylight, Shepherdin, the RFID, there's an RFID, including its text, right at the bottom, there, they're all part of the PCAM Schedule D.
Apart from the one solution, you've got a lot of hardware as well.
Hardware, and not just hardware, there are others also software issues like consumables. You can just go back, look at the first one in this slide. Just go back, please, Kevin. Safety goggles. First of all, they were clear red and orange. Really, you don't need a safety goggle for PCAM. But these safety goggles are used in the determination of the different frequencies of the prints when you observe them from the crime scene or from the laboratories. But they're all coupled with a PCAM solution. The next one. And the next one. Maybe let's go back to this one. All those items that was performed by the division TMS amounted to 945 million. All of those ones. Over the years, they've got different tasks. Each category has got a different cost. For example, those big data software is an example. This is a software utilized by the different kinds of cameras to be able to determine the types of the latents. You know, it depends what the cost of the very data software are. Some of them are digitalized, some of them are 360-degree catering devices. On 945 million, I'm now talking from the inception of PCAM contract, item that has got nothing to do with software development, but peripherals. This is the cost. And then next, these ones are the Schedule B items, but they were procured from the forensic science environment, but also part of the Schedule D because they are all called PCAM. These are the Blue Star tablets. These are also used in the crime scene environment. The DAVs, the hematics, those are the testing solutions at the crime scenes, the lenses. Next one, Kevin, the polylights. The stepping plates, you know, the stepping plates are the plates that are used at the crime scenes not to contaminate one area to the next. Next one, water that is used within the forensic environment, the laboratory itself, the sterile water, it's not something that you can buy from the shops or something. This is specifically packaged for lab purposes. All that was procured from the forensic science laboratory, you know, for the forensic purposes was 210 million. You know, at the time of deception, and this has got nothing to do again with the PCAM solution as a software, but in support of all that was supposed to be achieved within the PCAM overall contract during the time of awarding of this particular contract. The next part talks to the just final spend, the person that to date. All the amount that was, the money that was spent on Schedule D attempts is 1.2 billion, you know, on the pens. Some of which was paid for, you know, from different project codes within the South budget, some of which is from the CAS allocation, from the IGS allocation, depending on what the specific item is, as it is reflected, because it was not part of what was given within the operational baseline. And then there was credit notes, that's a smaller amount today, so about 3 million rand for recognition, other items, as the quality control was being done on the items. Now, another question that came up, Chair, as we kept on presenting the PM, was some of those things that we saw were important, that were critical, that are still critical to date, and that we still continue to utilize as part of gun fighting or combating, you know, that were embedded within the PKM contract, because at some point we had to clean up the PKM contract. You know, so that while I speak to PKM, I speak to PKM as a solution and not PKM with all the cousins. We established all the procurement vehicles that were very relevant. And all these ones that are listed on the right chair, the 360 image capturing, the digital capturing systems, those light sources and all those, we have separate contract now for them. You know, they have established separate contracts. We went out on a bid process. General Kuza assisted to, you know, with the evaluations and the adjudications of these and their awards, so that they are now coupled or decoupled from the overall PKM, you know, as a solution. And then so that we are now left just with PKM and no Schedule D. For instance, there is no instance as of 2014-15 where a consumable oil product would have been procured from a PKM Schedule D. We would have then procured it from the relevant procurement vehicle. The next one, Kevin, it continues also those explaining solutions, the temper evidence bags, the labware solutions. Those are all that have been awarded to date in terms of what we contained in the Schedule D with the PKM contract. And what is currently in place is those ones for barcode printers, the RFID solution to roll out to other areas of the forensics, and perhaps some within the firearms registry, as well as the last one, the field criminal devices, which are also the CSIR person is one of those that in the previous run, sitting before this committee, I had indicated also that I have sent the field terminals to CSIR for evaluation, so that when the bid is awarded, the company that gets the bid is a company which is not only competent, but it is also going to ensure that the terminals that are approved can also communicate and interface with existing systems, because there is no point buying a product and I can't even utilize it now. The police are doing the roadblocks, they can't even get the information they are looking for. So part of the outcome that we are waiting from the CSIR is the evaluation of the field terminal devices, so that the process can also then be completed. And that concludes the PKM process. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jill, for a very comprehensive presentation. I think it dealt with a lot of issues that was raised in previous presentations. I'll allow members for questions. Honourable Molabasi, Honourable Ramatakane.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My question is on Treasurer. So in 2011, when you undertook a visit to the Eastern Cape, you found very expensive equipment that were standing there gathering dust and so on. And we were told it's not switched on. Can you tell me where are we now regarding the SMP Delta? And the other thing that was disturbing in what we were told was the equipment is somehow going to be outdated as time goes on, which then said what was procured by that time might not be used at a later stage. Can you tell me something about it? Thank you.
Monabashi, Honorable Ramatakane.
No, thank you, Honorable Chair, and thank you, General, for the comprehensive presentation. Well, just to work with the Honorable Mulevas on the tender, just small additions. On that issue, I mean, the information that we received then was that some of the equipment were purchased and paid for but not yet received. Maybe when, but perhaps Chair or this one, there was the when we received the report before, there was an issue that there was investigation, that the comprehensive report will come and then we will see it. But I think we still need to have that particular engagement. We did request that once that is available, we should at least be taken on board. But quickly on the picking, General, the just the obligations of parties in the contracts, what were they? I mean, entering into a contract and the bidding process, there should be some protection mechanism built into a contract in the case of lack of delivery or delivery that is not necessarily in line with the brief. So now at the end there is a mediation trying to mediate this, but what I'm not getting is in the event of a breach of a contract, what are the remedies in terms of this and what are the obligations from one party to the other? But it looks like the whites just had a free ride, it's just been really milking and milking and milking without its own obligations for correcting. Now at the end there's a dispute, and that dispute has to be mediated, but the money is paid in full. But the contract requirement has not been met in full. Perhaps not even probably 50% of it, if you can't get what you're supposed to get in terms of the requirement. Two, are you taking responsibility as the police and in terms of scope amendment or deviation of scope, of a scope that is basically not necessarily cast in concrete, that keep moving? And if you do, is it equally taking a responsibility that the lack of delivery is as a result of you shifting a scope from time to time? Thirdly, you did say that Bites had more capabilities, and so they would tell you anything in the back of buy any back of you want potato, but you get tomatoes in a way. So the question that I'm asking is that also in the contract, the issue about the transfers of skill in the process, but linked to that, what's the role of FITA? Given that, I mean, to talk about specs and the role of FITA in the process and awarding, but I don't hear the role of FITA in ensuring that there's a full compliance and meeting the obligation in terms of the specs as it is implemented. So the question is that why walking away? What was the obligation also that FITA is supposed to play a particular role, given its own, competency level or expertise level, if you like? So why walking away? The last one, not the second last, is the time frame for the completion of the investigation and mediation by the CSR. What is it? Now, the last question, you did answer this question before, and you said no, they were going for money. But I wanted to ask you this question. If you look at the whole picture that you presented, and your summary that the police still can't have the equipment that they expected to have when they at the roadblock or because of the lack of equipment or working equipment as it was anticipated or planned to be in terms of the contract. but then you talked about 1.2 billion expenditure. Would you not agree with me that at least some of the expenditure could be falling within the period A category of what is called fruitless expenditure? Because if you're not going to be able to utilize it, well, how do you deal with that particular question when that question comes to you?
Honorable Malabachi, for the one.
I just skip this. The SIU investigation, is it completed? And if it is, are we going to see her thoroughly? My next one is on the computer editors. Is there a cost to address this? Thank you.
Maybe just three questions from my side. Both of these, I think, touches relates to the big issue of contract management. And we know the issues may be a question to the Acting National Commissioner. In terms of your new structure that you envisage, that you briefed the committee on about 2 weeks ago, I think the committee also, as previously, the synergy with legal services, ensuring that in terms of contractual arrangements, in terms of due diligence, what is going to be done? Because I think it's especially the one of PKM is a good case study, maybe for Harvard or Pretoria, I don't know, all these institutions that have to use with the senior management, but maybe not how to procure, because the problem is because of the variation orders, in the end you pay more for the variation order than the initial capital amount. So the question is, what are we doing from a management point of view to ensure that legal services come on board, there is a technical ability, of course you've got CSIR, but to ensure that we kind of mitigate that risk, that's a big question. The second issue is with relation to the issue of the CSIR report was made available to the committee members, and there is in the conclusion, the consultants made the following observation. The cost estimation has no relation to the building environment. The cost estimation for completion is speculative due to the non-existence of a contract and uncertainty of the tempo at which ISIs can be acquired. But the non-existence of a contract, that's a big issue. So I think contract management working steps need urgent attention, because the risk flung from that is 1.2 billion later on one project, and we've got only one user friendly outcome that's positive. The risk is still up in the air, and actually there will have to be new costs in the new year and in the coming years to ensure that we bring those things into line. The third issue is just to get an indication of processes with regard to bits, and just to get an assurance if there's problems with bits, who's got authority to? Is there an internal mechanism for people to whistleblow? Was there a reason for whistleblowers with regard to bidding? And for instance, I say hypothetically, there is bids published that's been catered to let's say, be in favor of certain companies, or bid specifications are kind of amended to be specific. What process is there internally to pick it up and deal with it proactively? Right, thank you very much.
Chair, may I request to deal with some of the issues so that I can be excused? I'm going to first start with PKM. And I will always want to see PKM in three categories. The first category is PKM version 1.1. That's, if there is investment there, it's investment which we are deriving value out of, because it is functioning optimally within the forensic science laboratory environment. So there is value for money. And then the second part is the version 1X. Which version had the, you know, the specifications that General Shezi mentioned did not come in play, we could have maybe went a long way in implementing version 1.1, because there is a case which shows that it is working. So you could have rolled it out and maybe did some modification to accommodate what would have been critical for stations which was not maybe included here. So I think there will remain a question mark on version 1.x in terms of the development work and whether that what was done is working for us or not. Clearly it is not working. There is a lot that has to be rectified. In terms of version, of PCM and the current schedule D, it has always been an issue even from us when we were looking at it from a forensic science laboratory perspective, in that there were far too many issues or items that were included on version on schedule D, which at a time we thought that maybe we could have been better engaged by the Team S environment at a point where they entered into that arrangement, because some of those things we could then find them outside the Schedule D, but you having a Schedule D, you had to go through that route. But I think what we procured out of there was critical for us to utilize, and we continue to utilize it. I mean, there you have got things like your cameras, your light sources for crime scenes and so on. So there is value that we are deriving, and it is not equipment which is redundant. It is equipment that continue to be utilized to benefit us as the police. Having looked at it, we have taken a decision to say, let's go and put the vehicles in place through which we can still procure this critical equipment. This is where General Shezi made visible a number of contracts which are now outside the PCM Schedule D, but it will be similar equipment or which would have been part of Schedule D. So we have that process going. In respect of the investigation, I'm now talking PCM. The matter, I think, was investigated by the SIU, and the Hawks did the investigation. The case was presented to the what is Director of Public Prosecution. And in actual fact, I think my first or second week in office, I saw the report coming back to say decline to prosecute, because when they looked at everything that was done, processes that were followed, they did not find anything that is contrary to the what is it, Treasury, National Treasury prescripts and so on. And to say when maybe what we could do, the recommendation is look at a better way of entering into contracts, so that when you do a contract, you don't do a contract on the system and then attach any other things. It must be very clear, this is a contract related to development of systems and so on, and you have got a separate contract for procurement of whatever equipment you will require to enable the system. And that is exactly what was done when we started purifying what was in Alexa D, to take it and put it to put separate vehicles in place to be able to utilize it. Now, a little bit on version, what is 1X. I think somewhere we need to do this balancing act, because there is a mediation process which will be where CSIR will play a part. Now, they will not be able to do their evaluation without the developers of the of version X, which means somewhere is going to be money required. Now, the question is, the money that is required to pay the developer so that they can take them through, you know, and develop an understanding of what they were doing and where they are, that money, is it less than the money that you were to pay, or you were to pay for what they say, we have done work and you did not pay us? So, I think it's that which need to be evaluated so that we don't run into a chain. I think Honorable Matlakane referred to PFMA issues and so on. We need to look at that very, very closely. So, if we were to go forward somewhere, I think there must be a serious consideration from the environment to say, at which point are we going to take the decision and say, either we roll out, what is it, 1.1, and you roll it out with what modification. If it is not that rollout, what is it that you are going to do to make sure that we get that system that will still be able to help us manage the setting source, because there is definitely a critical need there. In terms of the other issues, let me just deal with the issue of contract management. You would have noted, Chair, in the structure that we have presented, we have taken legal and policy out of the HRM environment and located it in that under that deputy, which we refer to asset and legal management, precisely because of where we have got more issues related to contracts and so on. It is in that particular environment when it comes to your supply chain management, your IT, when it comes to the money issues and so on. So it is an attention to build capacity that must allow us to deal with these contract-related matters, which we have been dealing with for some time. On this, I'm also going to ask General Kruse to talk to it. But what we have done was, for example, to make sure that there is compliance on our part in terms of the procurement prescription when it comes to the mandating of the BAC and so on, so that you don't have an individual outside that space taking decisions contrary to decisions that the BAC, who is privy to the finer details of what is being evaluated. So there is an arrangement in that regard. In terms of whistleblowing, we continue to entertain the whistleblowers. For example, at some point we had one of our contracts, I think it was in relation to the consumables on the implementation of the Act, where we had to withdraw. Why? Because there was a complaint in the form of someone whistleblowing, say there is something not right. So when that comes to our attention, the matter gets referred to the office, and we immediately stop the processes to make sure that we eliminate the non-compliance in that regard. So whistleblowing will always be very critical, especially when you deal with matters of this nature. I'm not sure before General Chief, maybe General Kruse can just talk to the processes, whistleblowing, and this.
Question, honourable members. Members, in terms of the procurement processes itself, are the two things, social guarantee and itself. When this contract picking board is privately, TIM has had a mandate deal with procurement directly with CETA, which means it never came through SEPS procurement processes. That's why I think we have a lot of challenges. That has been rectified for some time now. TMS has to go to procurement. We must first satisfy ourselves that the description in terms of that before we then send it to CETA. Likewise, after CETA awards a bid, it cut back to the bid committee. We evaluate whether we're happy that CETA has complied with those prescriptions. If the things of the addendums, we would not have agreed to that if it came via the BAC's process. But in that state, there was no process. Like at the head of the DMS thing, which was called something else then. But it was ISM, which is a sign of an added addendum and all those things which created the problem around, I think, some of the challenges we had between now and normalized itself. So I think since we've done that process with TMS, I think we seem to have better control in terms of the bids which is dedicated by CETA, well, I deal with the issue of CETA around the PKM. That bid was ordered by CETA, as you were asking the honorable member. The PKM bid was not ordered by SAPS. SAPS had no role in the ordering of that bid. So the whole bid and the technicality was the whole CETA process itself, not the SAPS process itself. SAPS from IMS, the TMS side, gave input to it, but the whole process from start to end of education was conducted in the CETA environment. The only thing which was done by the SAPS environment was the signing of the contract itself, which is a SAPS obligation. So that whole process in terms of that thing was done in that environment itself. There were, maybe while I deal with the issues itself on my level, in terms of TETRA, all the equipment was delivered. The year before, I sent out a team from my asset management, and we put everything onto the system itself, and everything we paid for was accounted for when we did that itself. So everything that we paid for was on our system and recorded for itself, which we then verified with our own people together with it. But we verified and we signed off as asset managers and not TMS that everything we got in terms of the products were delivered to the Eastern Cape itself. So we can confirm that we got the money in terms of delivery. The issue of contract management, while we were about it, I think what is done, we have a legal person now in our office which has played a bigger role, I think, even before this, to assist that in terms of where the challenges are legally. And I think that's ensured that we deal with our budget in a better way, where we go for legal opinion before we finalize the budget. We're not sure that's true about those issues. So, on the issue of scope creep and contract management, I also, if we have a contract, no one may deviate from that contract as a reality, unless we apply to the bid committee to extend. We might also only extend in terms of a certain limit. It's a 15% of a contract beyond the price of a contract under normal conditions. So presently, the TMS may not vary a contract or add any addendums unless it goes back to the bid committee, which then apply the prescripts of Treasury around this issue. So I think we have managed to since these contracts, I think we learned a lot from them. We have managed to deal with most of those issues itself. Contract manager, legal service, etc. Was no existing contract. Chair, there was a stage when the contract was under and there was an application to extend the contract from TMS, and I think we agreed in principle, but the accounting office did not agree with the process, which means the contract then came to an end. Once the contract is dead, we cannot proceed with this, which is the stage we are in presently. And obviously we have to go out to, if it's up to the end user of TMS, we want to proceed, they can think about it. There has to be a new procurement process to proceed with that process itself. As a whistleblowing, we open the report, we investigate every matter that comes to us. We work with the Hawks very closely on those matters itself. We do receive issues. There's also a lot of contention with high-value bids itself. The companies also try to delay. You know, when it's a high-value bid, it's very difficult to delay, but there's constant complaints. Because I get the sense that all the companies have someone conflicted somewhere, so it's not only once. You have all of them complaining about something itself. We had canceled many of our big bids because of some of those. Once it comes to contaminated complaints, normally cancel and re-advertise to deal with those issues. And we've done it on one of the biggest bids, which is complicated, which is again the share part bid, which is very complicated and very expensive. But because of condensation, we rather cancel this contamination, not because of content, we just used to contempt. And we have to change the members on those committees to try to resolve the issues. So there is that process in place to deal with those issues. I hope I have anything else. The eyesight, sorry, the issue of eyesight, it didn't get. The buildings, it was with public works again. It's a very serious challenge. And I think one of the challenges around that contract itself, where we, as the bid committee office, should be extended, because the non-delivery was not entirely on the company. We could not take it on the company. We could not deliver an infrastructure to put up a call center. How do you say the company is not delivered? We have not managed it in the high sites, but public works failed to give us that high site. They canceled two of those buildings twice. So the company could not be liable for delivery of a system if it could not really give them the infrastructure to do so, etc. Now, that basis we wanted to defend, but as I say, it was so excited that it's not a viable option, but they can't be offered. Thanks.
But we've got, we must start with the next session. 3 minutes for SAP's round off. Anbara Makanich, you're welcome.
Okay, I know I am very conscious about time. I'm hearing from General Cruz saying this was FIDA, and FIDA dealt with this exclusively. But they were doing it for you on behalf of us. So therefore, we had a role to play as an oversight role. Can't simply say it was not necessarily and understand that they were the responsible people in terms of their the capabilities and things. But you are still as an authority that wants the system had an oversight role to play. Is it is it your view that you had you saying there was a value? I wrote that you said that in what you've seen on the slides that there was certainly a value, because I was taking a view that how do you respond to the issue of KMFA as well as the issue about the fruits and expenses. Is it your view that even the Schedule D inclusive of everything, all what has been procured has been put to use as you speak in order for you to determine the value? My listening skills suggested not.
Yeah, maybe let me just clarify myself. I Honorable Chair, I try to have three categories. One, I say version 1.1, it's fully functional, we're driving value out of it. Items that were bought from Schedule D, and I can talk about items which were bought from Schedule D outside the forensic environment, because I can only talk competently on those. Now, there we talk cameras, we talk light sources. There is, for example, a 360-degree camera there. So I'm saying, in as far as those items are concerned, there is definitely value for money, because they are deployed. They are not somewhere in a storage. They are getting utilized. If we will look the case, for example, the late River, the Oscar Pistorius case, you will have seen the display of the 360-degree, because what it does, it enables you, you know, to take a much broader area and be able to manage what is going on there. So I can't say much at this stage about procurement, either for visual policing and so on. But definitely, the items that were procured, they are being utilized. Where we have a problem, I think it is in version 1X, because a lot went in there for development, but we are not yet able to utilize the system or what would have been developed. So 1.1 and the item there, yes, there is room for money. And that is why when we try to correct what was wrong, we went on a bid still to procure similar equipment. So we now have contracts outside the Schedule D to procure those cameras, the light sources, and so on, because those are forensic equipment that you use. The wrong thing would have been to collapse them at a point when you were looking at a system. They were supposed not to be part of that particular contract.
Just to close off.
Thank you, Chair. I think the General has already spoken to it. But I want to just close off also on the Tetra equipment, the request, the question that we raised about equipment that was there dating back 2010. This slide was presented in the previous session, the person when we did the Tetra presentation, and you could see all those that the breakdown of all the equipment that is there, with their various categories, from the base stations to the microwave to the towers. It's like this. What was ordered and what was delivered and what was resolved and what was paid for in storage is something that we can account for, even to the detail of where exactly are they laying, you know, against our own asset management tool. So we can actually tell exactly what was paid, where is it, against
all the amount that is already there, and that is what we have tabled in the previous session. And what is outstanding, the 161, is not what we paid for. It's what we had ordered that hasn't been delivered, but hasn't been paid. But this was part of the following phases, of phase 3 and 4, where General Kuza had already spoken to that. The sites are not available as yet. We still don't have a contract for acquisition of those sites. It's still a problem. We still haven't rolled in. We have this equipment. The concern is correct to say by the time that we get those sites, what will be the status of those equipment now? You know, that you already have in storage, you can provide for those sites, where the sites is simply not available by PWD. But we have to get those sites ready. But that's from the TCAN chairperson. With the stock taking that we've already done, we are ready to commission what is already procured. You know, so we've done stock, we know what is the differential there, we are going to pay off the differential and then be able to utilize, as the honorable members had inquired, why don't you put it on, you know, for what you've already paid. We can then enable the solution to function where it is already being procured and installed and has been passed.
Thank you, Chair. I think those are amongst our general person has already spoken to the way for money. It is just in the one act where we will then determine what is the next set of steps that will take pending the outcome of the CSIR report. Thank you, Chair.
Right, Honourable Minister, that's all the questions for this section. Thank you very much, Acting National Commissioner and your team for coming to the Budget Committee. We already dealt with the previous issues. I think we'll take note of today's input. And if need be, we will look at that again in the first term. Thank you very much. Members, we will take a 4 minutes break, and we'll just give an opportunity for Judge Musa and his team to come to the floor. General, onward from your side.
Sorry, Chair, just one. I know that we read about it in the papers. I just want to put it here on the record for the Chair, that take note that we indeed have issued notices of suspensions to two senior managers, Lieutenant General Mahali and Lieutenant General Mbekela. Yes, the process dictates that you give them time frames within which to respond. So we are waiting for the responses. So I just did not want it to be running there without you knowing. But as to the details, we continue to say to those that are inquiring that it is an employer-employee relationship issue, and we don't feel that we need to peddle those issues in the public space. And lastly, I know that this is the last sitting. We won't be called here before the 1st of January. Our best wishes to you for the festive season, and hope that 2016 becomes a better year than 2015. Thank you very much.
General, thank you very much for that information. Yes, I think from the Portfolio Committee side, we've taken note of it, and of course it's an Intelsap's matter, and I mean, as we go along, do a report on progress in that regard. For us, it's just important that there should be necessary acting persons in place, you know, if processes are followed through. That's quite important. On the second issue, also, we from the Portfolio Committee side want to wish SAPS well over the festive period, because they're going to be very busy. There's a lot of operations running. We hope that it will be a successful year. Thank you very much. 4 minutes break, members, and we'll start with the Inspecting Judge of DCI.
I'm
Yeah. I think it's been very important.
Kevin sent it to me first, so maybe if he sent it by this evening, then I'll forward to you. Okay.
Who's Kevin?
The man who does the change of supplies. Right here. Yeah. Colonel. Yeah.
Thank you, Honourable. Thank you, Honourable members. Thank you very much for coming back. Apologies, Dutch. You know, but sometimes, of course, even the lawyers have to wait. But thank you. So thank you very much, Dutch, and your team for coming. We appreciate it very, very much. Honourable members will remember, we already had some interactions with the judge. His important role in terms of ensuring that there's oversight over the DCI. And today is also just to give a brief report on his activities during this third period. His third annual report, and welcome, Josh, you're also welcome to introduce your team.
Thank you very much. Honourable members of the Portfolio Committee, members of Parliament, I must thank all of you for giving us the opportunity to make this particular presentation. Before I do the presentation, I'll introduce my team. This is Mr. Rajivela, he's the Chief Investigator of our unit. On my right is my personal assistant, Bongiwe, and then at the back is the, my security and driver, and I'm the head, as he ties up, the head of this particular unit called the Office of the DPCI Judge. We have, in fact, been asked to give a short briefing on our third annual report that we have submitted. The report basically sets out the table of contents. I'm not going to take you through that, but as we go along, we'll be dealing with some of the issues. The purpose of the brief, the purpose is to brief the Portfolio Committee on Police on the third annual report of the Office of the DPCI Judge, complaints mechanism established in terms of Section 70L of the Steps Act, which is basically our founding document. As the head of your office, I take pleasure in briefing you on this third annual report of our office. The report covers the period of the 1st of April 2014 to the 30th March 2015. Our primary function is to provide oversight over the investigations conducted by the Hawks. We essentially investigate complaints from and against members of the Hawks. Our key priority for this particular period under review was to establish our offices, appoint staff, embark on an intensive reverse campaign as required in terms of the legislation, inform members of the public and members of the House of our role and function, and brief stakeholders and role players setting up our administrative systems and investigate complaints. Now, I must say that this has taken us almost 2 years to set it up since my appointment. At the time when I was appointed, we had no structure whatsoever, and we had to, and I personally had to stop setting up structure, appointing staff, setting in motion, setting the systems in place, etc. But my contract was a period of 2 years, and by the time I just set up the unit, my contract had expired, and I was then approached by the Minister of Police to extend my contract. My contract has been extended for a purpose, for a period of another 3 years. So reluctantly, I had to consider some of my staff members who's only in office for a few months, and their tenure of office depended on my tenure of office. So I reluctantly agreed to extend my contract for a further period. Now, as far as the operational budget is concerned, for the under review, the total amount of budget that we allocated was 5.278 million. The total amount spent during the year was 1.380 million, of which 795,000 was for salaries, and 549,000 was for goods and services. This is set out in the graph that follows. We had a total surplus for that period of 3.897 million, and I think this eventually had to go back to treasury. But the reason for the surplus has been that at the time when we had the money in the budget, but we didn't have any officers, we didn't have any staff, we had the systems in place, and for those reasons we were not able to expend the money, and that resulted in us having the substantial surplus. But since then we have now the officers in place, staff in place, etc. Insofar as the investigation of complaints are concerned, there were three complaints which we received during the previous financial period and was carried over to the present period under review, and in fact was completed during the current period. We received 14 new complaints during that period, of which 13 were from members of the public, and only one complaint from members of the courts. Of the new complaints, four complaints did not fall strictly within our mandate, and they were referred in terms of Section 17(5) to other institutions with the necessary mandate to deal with the matter. The graph that follows shows the number of complaints received during that particular period. Then also during the period under review, we've drafted a performance plan to enable us to measure our annual performance in terms of such plan. Unfortunately, we could not implement that plan during the course of the period under review because we didn't have structures and offices in place. But we have, in fact, decided to implement this for the new year under for the new financial year coming. And insofar as our output is concerned, in terms of our investigations, we've during the period under review completed 28.6% of the complaints that we received. The reason for the low output were because we were in the process of setting our offices, engaging extensive campaign to raise awareness. Many of the complaints were received towards the end of the financial year. Many of the complaints we could not complete as the matters were either in the hands of the public prosecutor to decide whether to prosecute or not, And for those reasons, we were not able to complete some of the investigations. Three complaints that we carried out over from the previous year were completed during that period under review, and we achieved at least 100% performance in respect of those complaints carried over. With regard to reports to the Minister of Police in terms of Section 17L6, we achieved an output of 100%. Insofar as the awareness campaign is concerned, which we are required to conduct in terms of our founding document, 17L15, we have achieved an output of 100% in respect of our stakeholders, role players, national and provincial officers of the Corps. As far as members of the public are concerned, we have covered 6 provinces nationwide, and we still have to cover another 3 provinces, namely Free State, Northern Cape, and Mpumalanga. We've achieved, insofar as the awareness campaign is concerned, an output of 67%. We hope that in the new year we'll be able to complete the rest of the provinces. Then in addition to that, in our report we also identified trends and recommendations, and this was essentially done in order for the purpose of policy consideration and service delivery. These trends and recommendations set out and in the report, and I am not going to bore you with those issues, essentially issue of for policy considerations and for service delivery. That then leads me to the conclusion of our report, as we are now fully operative with the necessary offices, staff, infrastructure. We should be able to improve on our performance with regards to investigation of complaints. And for that, for the new financial year, we also now put in place the performance plan, and we've been able to measure our performance with the next financial year on the basis of that performance plan. Thank you very much for listening and your patience.
Very much. We will go to questions. First, Honourable Molebati, then Honourable Mangula, then Honourable Ramasakani, then Honourable Mars.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. The 13 complaints that were received from the communities, what was the nature of these complaints?
Yeah. Could I ask our chief investigator to respond to that particular question?
I must just write them down. I'm continuing.
Oh, okay.
My second question is, in raising awareness, do you feel your office is now known in the community? Thank you.
Mamula?
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for your presentation. Honorable Mira said come at me with those 13 complaints, but the other one is that you said you received 14 complaints and one complaint from a member of the Hawks. What is the progress report of the one for the member of the Hawks? It's in slide 10. In slide 16, you said you have covered 6 provinces and you are left with 3 provinces. When are you going to cover those 3 provinces? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mula. Honorable Ramzakani.
Perfectly fine. Chair, I just wanted to also thank the judge for the presentation. It's really a new office that for purpose of our purpose in terms of the oversight is fairly a new benchmarking will start to come into place as they go 1 year, 2 years, 3 years to start see that. But I in terms of the staff component, in terms of do what you're supposed to do that, would you say that you have everything that you need to do in terms of the human resource aspect, in terms of your structure?
Markie.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just two questions. On page 7, the annual operational budget. Is that the whole budget or is this only for your operations? If you answer that, maybe I'll be able to understand. And one other thing, I haven't gone through the act that established the office. Are you in a position to can initiate investigations according to the legislation, or do you only have to wait for complaints to come your way? Because if the answer is yes, then it takes me back to the amount of 5 million for operations, which I think might not be enough. Thank you, Chairperson.
Maybe just two questions from my side. Maybe just to get an indication from the judge and his team in terms of support from the secretariat, civilian secretariat. Is it sufficient? Do you need other support that we from the portfolio committee could put on the table to assist you to ensure that you move forward? And then the second issue, you're relatively new office. Now, there's only one complaint, I think, lodged from a member of the DPCI. Now, if you look at the public discourse this year and various articles, there's a lot of, there was a bit of turbulence here and there. Is there any proactive investigations from your side, or do you only, react on complaints? Thank you, honourable members. Over to the judge and team.
Sorry, I'm going to respond to the general questions. Those relating to the particular investigation, I'm going to leave to my investigator. As far as the community, we've gone on an extensive drive to inform the public of our existence, both as far as the public is concerned and as far as members of the hopes are concerned. Our essential mandate is to investigate complaints emanating from members of the public and also complaints emanating from members of the hopes. So we concentrated initially in visiting all the offices of members of the hopes throughout the country. We then also embarked on an extensive campaign to speak to all our role players and stakeholders. For example, we spoke to all our all the Chapter 9 institutions who are in fact our stakeholders and role players. And then we also embarked on provincial and regional awareness campaigns jointly with the secretariat, and we've covered other than the three provinces, most of the provinces and some of the regions within those provinces. So I would say yes, we've done extensive awareness campaign amongst members of the public as well as against four members of the GORPS. We hope within the next, early next year, we hope to do the three provinces that we still have to do, and I think once we've done that, we then have to concentrate particularly on the rural areas. Most of our interaction so far has been in urban areas, although we did from time to time go to some of the rural areas. We have, for example, had a request from Ulundi to come to Ulundi to do some input to the traditional leaders there. We have also had a request to go to the Eastern Cape, some of the rural areas in the Eastern Cape. And we hope to do that sometimes during the coming year. As far as the staff is concerned, we have a full complement of the staff. We don't need additional staff. Initially, we only had one investigator. We wanted to appoint the second investigator unless the volume of work had increased. and we have set up all our offices and all the infrastructure within the office. We have done that, so presently we do not see the need for additional staff unless the volume of work, in fact, increases. In that case, we might then have to have additional investigators. As far as the budget is concerned, the amount that is, it's a, not only operation, it's the entire budget, which includes the operation as well as the staffing, as well as equipment. Other than my salary, which is not paid from this particular budget, because I'm seconded by the Chief Justice, and that is paid by the Department of Justice. But the budget covers all the other expenses, both operational and administration. As far as the Secretariat is concerned, Mr. Chairman, you know, our accounting officer is in fact the Secretary of the police, and we have therefore an interaction with the Secretariat as a whole. Most of our administrative work is in fact handled by the Secretariat for their particular staff, like the appointment of staff, procurement, etc. is being handled by them. And then the accounting document particularly says that we need to conduct an awareness campaign for public and members of the halls with regard to our existence, and we work very closely with the communication section of the Secretariat. So we have a very close relationship between us and the Secretariat. Insofar as the investigations and the questions rising in respect of the investigation, we leave it to Mr. Basibala.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, as well as the members of the committee. A question with regards to the nature of complaints from members of the public against members of the hall. From the 14 complaints we received out of the period under review, 10 complaints were from members of the public, and those complaints were against members of the hawks. The members of the public complained of the infringement or the violation of their rights during the course of investigation conducted by the hawks. So the number of complaints were with regard to the infringement of their rights by members of the hawks. And then 4 complaints from the 14 were found to be not falling within our mandate. And then what we did, we conducted a preliminary investigation to be certain that these complaints are not falling within our mandate. And we referred such complaints to the relevant institutions that can deal with such complaint. The second question was about the complaint from a member of the office, the status of that investigation. We conducted investigation and we have completed and compiled a report, and we have submitted the report to the minister for consideration. In that complaint, I will not divulge or disclose the facts. We have identified some weaknesses within the SAES, and we've made a recommendation to remedy those weaknesses or the situation to the minister. The other question is around the impact of the awareness campaigns that which we've already done. Whether is it yielding some results. The fact is that the awareness campaign is a continuous thing, it's not a once-off thing. So we will continue conducting awareness campaigns to ensure that this office is popular, is known to every corner of the country. Though for now, the volume of complaints is not increasing, but we hope that
in the near future as we continue rolling out the awareness campaigns to all the stakeholders, to all our members of the public. We hope that the volume of complaints will increase. The other question is about can we initiate investigation or whether we can wait for members of the public to come and report the complaint. With the current legislation, Section 70L of the South African Police Service Act, it provides that members of the public can report complaints to us, as well as the members of the hof. So, which simply means that we can wait for them for the complainants to come to our office and report such complaint. But according to my own opinion, I don't think there's nothing which can stop us to initiate investigation if we see that the matter or a complaint which is involving members of the hofs, you know. But that will need the amendment of our legislation to give us power to initiate an investigation. Like for instance, if we see a major report, the report about members of the hofs involved in some infringement of rights of the members of the public, so we think we need to start investigation ourselves rather than wait for somebody else to come and report to us. So it will require the amendment of the legislation. So the other question was about the support from the Secretariat, whether it is sufficient or not. For now, we think the support that which we are getting from the Secretariat is very sufficient. You know, they are providing the necessary support so that we can be able to deliver on our mandate. Yeah, those are the few questions which I think, unless if there is one which I've left out. Yeah.
Thank you, Justice. In the final round, Honourable Mbatsi.
In your awareness campaigns, what do you do?
Any other questions? Thank you, members.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much. With regards to the awareness campaign, what we do is that we tell our stakeholders and members of the public of the role and functions of the office of the judge. In our awareness campaigns, we invite so many stakeholders and also members of the public, you know, stakeholders such as the IPs, you know, CIRA, those entities which reports to the minister, and also members of the public and community structures and the faith-based organization, and we also involve the municipalities, and we explain to them the functions and the role of the office of the judge, why this office was created, and how can the this office assist the members of the public if their complaints were unlawfully if their rights were unlawfully violated by members of the office. So we explain the process of lodging a complaint and also the powers that we have in terms of the legislation. Yeah.
Through your chair, and also what we actually did now, we go through an extensive awareness campaign. We have engaged to work with the entities that also report to the minister, not to go only as the office of the judge, but to go with those entities so as to define the roles so that the public may be aware of the staff is for this, and then all these entities, they do different roles, but together with the aim of ensuring that we live in a crime-free society. Thank you so much.
Any final word from the judge?
Thank you very much. Just want to comment. You know, the reason why we've not received many complaints from members of the hall is during the course of our interaction with them. They says, now, can you guarantee to us that we won't be victimized should we report a person who is my senior in the structure? Unfortunately, I mean, we can't give any sort of guarantees. We made that particularly clear, that issue particularly clear. So and with regard to the question of whether we can initiate any investigations on our own initiative, my interpretation is, as the law stands, we cannot, because we are specifically confined to receiving complaints from members of the public and from members of the home. But in addition to that, they also need to provide us with evidence. It's not only a question of complaint, but also they must give us evidence to enable us to investigate the complaint. And I mean, that sets the bar quite high for members of the public, for that matter. So I think that is one of the things that we need to pass, or Parliament might have to look at and see how they could possibly improve the powers that are vested with our particular unit. Obviously, the other issue, obviously, that there are other units which have a similar mandate to ours. For example, IPED. There could be a lot of duplication. Complaints could go to them instead of coming to us. And vice versa. We get a lot of complaints, for example, that doesn't fall within our mandate. It's more of a matter of discipline, and we then have to refer it to other particular complaints unit. But we also, what we intend doing to find out why there is the low number of complaints that we receive, is to possibly interact with other complaints unit and find out where some of the complaints that are supposed to come to us are not going to them, and they then deal with the matter. So we decided to embark on a fact-finding mission with regard to other complaints unit who might have similar mandates than us, and find out whether we can coordinate our particular initiatives and investigations. We hope by early next year to come up with some sort of facts and figures which we could possibly use in order to find out exactly what are the problems and how we could improve on our service delivery. Thank you very much.
Robert Akane?
Just a small honorable chair quickly. This is now only just commenting on the judge. The guarantee issue, those members of the Hawk who says, if we come to you, can you give us a guarantee that we're not going to be victims? I think perhaps the low level of reporting from that institution may be hinging on the fact that you said quite explicitly that no guarantees. But is that correct? Should there be an assurance given that the whole state, the state attitude towards the whistleblower instead of protecting the whistleblower, that therefore that what's applicable in terms of the whistleblowing in another department should equally be applicable to the whistleblowing in the Hawks and staff. So there should be a protection. So the question I'm asking, has there been any engagement with the lead agency on the witness or whistleblower kind of protection aspect? I think that the various departments, including Department of MTA, they do this together with the police, a lot of police statement taking for this. Whether that engagement would not help in order to reassure that, you know, there should be somewhere where somebody can in confidence give information that institution must help that person to have that space to make that statement, and at least to a degree say, you can't be victimized for this, or your employer, if you do victimize, this is going to be how we're going to respond to it.
Yeah, we haven't gone that particular route. The question here obviously is that he is a complainant. He's not a whistleblower in a sense, because he's directly involved. And he needs to give us a statement in which he then says exactly what his complaints are and against whom the complaint is. Whether that person can be defined as a whistleblower is obviously a big question. And whether the act that protects the whistleblower would cover him under those circumstances also another issue. But what we did indicate to them is if during the course of our investigation we find that a crime has been committed, that that there might be someone defeating the ends of justice, we could refer that complaint either to the police for purpose of investigation, or for that matter to the prosecutorial authority to decide whether to prosecute that person, the senior, who has interfered in that particular process. You see, that sort of assurance we get, but I mean, there's no guarantee we would say that he won't be victimized for that matter.
Thank you very much, honourable members. Thank you to the judge and his team for the presentation. I think your office is a very important institution. We from the Portfolio Committee support the effective function of the office. I think we also from the Portfolio Committee side wants to call on the public and members of the DPCI to make use of the office, because it's a check and balance in the whole system of policing in the country. And I think your office can play a very important role in ensuring that we've got police that is accountable in terms of the Constitution. So we will support your activities, and we wish you well, and also in the new year again arrange another opportunity for interaction. And I think we also believe that your office role should be further, I think, publicized, and you must go ahead also with further initiatives to get the public as well as your core constituents in DPCI know of the work. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you very much for listening to us patiently, and may I also be comfortable with the season to all of you.
Thank you. Honourable members, we've come to the last, at the end of the last meeting of the year. I want to thank everybody, especially the members, for their hard work during the year. Also those that are absent, those that have left us for green departures during the year. Then also the committee staff in their absence. Thank you, Sinead, for standing in today, and also Dr. Tully, who was here earlier. Then also the civil society, institutions, BMG, Secretariat, IFED, media, all the role players, thank you very much. We will reconvene this committee on Tuesday, 26 January, at 10, and we will start with minutes and reports. So I want to wish everybody very well over the festival period. Thank you.
Well, Chair, can we also say a thing just speaking on behalf of everyone, that we also want to return the same words to you, given that you have been the leader that has basically maintained the direction to navigate through the difficult road of 2015, that you should also be taking a bit of rest, even then the media is going to be harassing you at home. But we also want to really appreciate your leadership. Thank you.